we've got a busy day. We've got to get through scallops, Amendment 11. So I'll turn it over to either Dave or Deirdre, whoever. Over to Dave. Thank you.
Yeah, Deirdre is going to take us through the document here. What we've got to get done today, of course, is we've got to get Amendment 11 approved for public hearing. That's the phase we're at here. It's just approval for a public hearing document to go out to the public, get comments next month, and come back in June to vote on the, you know, the final decision for Amendment 11. Just want to remind people of that. This isn't the last day. It's really more like the first. And then the other thing is Framework 20, to get that going for the to prevent overfishing in this fishing year come next January and February.
Okay, thanks, Dave. I would just like to take a moment to go through all the meeting materials you have before you, because there are quite a few of them, and then we'll actually get into the hard work. So let's just take 5 minutes to make sure everyone has what they need. If you look at the status sheet, there are 9 documents listed on that list, and there have been several correspondence that have come in since this was mailed to you. So the first document is a timeline. I'm only going to briefly discuss a few of these items in detail, and then we can get into the more detailed discussion later as we go through the amendment. The only thing I wanted to point out about document number 1 is it's not your imagination if it seems that this just keeps growing in terms of the work we are trying to accomplish in 2007. It's not your imagination. That is actually what's happening. This table has been updated for every single council meeting, and it seems to just grow. There's a list of the actions we are trying to get through the system for 2007. You can see where we are right now at the April council meeting, about halfway down the columns there, and you'll see Dave just went through the sort of the timeline for Amendment 11, so I'll skip over that. Amendment 13, just to remind you, the council did select final measures for that at the last council meeting, and we have submitted that document, and it is through the process over at the National Marine Fisheries Service. Framework 19, we don't want to lose sight of that. It's definitely going to be a lot of work this summer, and the plan is to bring that back to the council in September for final decisions. And lastly, Framework 20, we'll talk about later this afternoon, the potential need to initiate that action to prevent overfishing in fishing year 2007. We would potentially initiate that at this meeting and bring it also back for final decisions in June. I just want to flip over the page because I think it will help set the stage for our discussions today. This is a working timeline that the staff at the council and the region have put together, because this is a really big task, getting Amendment 11 through the process in time for the June meeting. And rather than people just not really understanding all of the steps in between that have to happen for it to occur, we put it here because I think it helps illustrate the reality that we're under with this action. And if you kind of look through it, you'll see that everything's very tight. We did get a pre-review through the agency of the document. We heard back from them at the end of this last week, and they have not identified any fatal flaws with the amendment, which is good news. They did, however, have a pretty lengthy letter and discussion of items that they would like to see worked on before we can submit the document. So you're aware, the plan is for me to submit this document this Friday, in 3 days from now. So please just keep that in mind when we're going through the document in terms of potential adjustments and changes to it. And you'll see if that gets delayed, everything else on this list would then be pushed back. I think that's really all I wanted to point out about document number 1. Document number 2 is, of course, the DSEIS. That, too, has grown since the last council meeting. We had a busy winter working on the analyses. We went through it at the last committee meeting, and I'm not going to really spend any time on this document right now because we will obviously get to it throughout the day. The only thing I guess would be worth noting would be to, before we get into all the different alternatives in the document, would be just to remind everyone of the actual purpose and need of this action, as well as the policy guidance that this council has developed through this process, as well as actually a vision statement that the committee spent a lot of time developing. I just want to point those sections out. The purpose and need is described in section 1.2, followed by the actual vision statement. Maybe I'll just take a minute to read those aloud and remind everyone so we can keep them in mind when we go through the process of selecting preferred alternatives. Again, the primary need for this action is to implement more effective management measures to control fishing mortality by the general category sector of the scallop fishery. And again, to help focus this amendment, the Council approved policy guidance, which is described in italics in the next paragraph, which basically is to focus on addressing that capacity and mortality issue through limited entry and implementation of a hard tack. This amendment will not consider measures that maintain the general category sector as an open access fishery with input controls as the only mechanism to manage general category effort. Again, the second need for this action was to allow for better and more timely integration of sea scallop assessment results in the management process. The vision statement I'm not going to read through right now. You are familiar with it. The Council approved it in entirety. It is rather long, but it does describe basically the diverse nature and recognition that the fishery has evolved with time and there are diverse participants, and that this amendment hopefully will keep that in mind, help to stabilize capacity and prevent overfishing from this fishery while maintaining the diverse nature and flexibility of this component of the scallop fishery. So in general, we can move on to document number 3 because we'll spend a lot more time on this document later. Document number 3 was the only document that wasn't mailed to you. It is basically the draft cumulative effects section. And the reason for that is it kind of, after all the analyses are completed, it's a synthesis of all those different impacts of actions in the past, actions in the future. It's a synthesis of everything, so it does take time after the amendment is put together to complete this section. So I wasn't going to spend a lot of time today since we have other things to do to really go through this document, but certainly it still can be worked on during the public hearing process and so forth. But in general, you can flip through this and get a sense of the directionality of some of the expected impacts from Amendment 11. Document number 4 is something we'll probably use most of the day, and this is a decision document that was put together to help the Council get through selecting preferred alternatives for Amendment 11. Once I get through all the meeting materials, I would like to start with this document, so keep this one handy, definitely. It tries to kind of illustrate the work we have in front of us today, so I'll go through that in more detail later. One other thing that was handed out this morning that does not have a number on it is a single sheet that has text on the front and is blank on the back. And it says, it was at your tables this morning, and there are copies out on the table for the public. It says, under new alternatives to potentially be considered in Amendment 11. Again, I'm going to wait to go through this until we get to this topic in our discussions, but just want to make sure that you have it. And this is something that came up after your meeting packages were sent, something that I'd like to raise as a potential issue. But we'll get to that later. Document number 5 is a copy of the last Scallop PDT meeting summary. Don't plan on spending really any time on this. Wanted you to have it for your reference. The PDT did go through the Amendment 11 DSEIS. There were several last suggestions about potential improvements to the existing alternatives. The PDT did not discuss any new alternatives or real guidance for the committee in terms of decision-making, although they do have several kind of comments on the top of page 3, so overall statements and recommendations for the Council to consider when selecting preferred alternatives. In general, related to Framework 20, we talked about that at the end of the PDT meeting. We can get to later in the day, but there is general support from the PDT to initiate that action to prevent overfishing for all of fishing year 2007, and I can get into the reasons why the PDT feels that way later today. Document number 6 is a meeting summary from the joint general category and scallop advisory panel meeting that we had back in March. Again, I'm not going to go through this. Hopefully everyone has had a chance to review it. Overall, it was a very productive meeting. The general category advisors met individually in the morning to go through specifically the qualification alternatives, and then both panels met in the afternoon to go through the rest of the EIS and identify recommended measures as preferred alternatives for the committee the following day. The only things I'll mention overall is that there was strong support for limited entry from both the advisory panels in terms of the preferred method to prevent overfishing and control mortality from the sector of the scallop fishery. They support an individual allocation strategy. You are familiar within the document, there's a couple different options for that, and they definitely oppose a hard tack management because of the unintended consequences of derby fishing. They support consideration of a northern Gulf of Maine area, and they also support limited access vessels participating under general category fishery if, in fact, those vessels qualify under the same criteria. And there were other issues, of course, that they discussed that we can go through as we're going through the rest of the document, but I just wanted to highlight those in general. Document number 7 is a meeting summary from the last committee meeting, which was the following day. Again, I think maybe leaving this out would be a good idea so we can reference it while we're going through the different decisions. The committee did make recommendations for preferred alternatives. We did run out of time. There's a lot in this document. We spent a good amount of time getting through the more difficult decisions, arguably, but again, a lot of them were we just ran out of time and couldn't discuss them. And in general, I think we'll just wait to kind of talk about this as we go through the decision document. Document number 8 is some background about the potential need to initiate Framework 20. Tried to just describe this for you. Hopefully you had a chance to read it so you're not taken by surprise about the potential motion that the committee made at the end of their meeting to initiate this action. Again, we'll get to this after we get through Amendment 11. The next few documents are correspondence. Document number 9 was in your meeting package. This was a document with several enclosures from the Garden State scallop sector. It was submitted to the scallop committee as well as the full council, but again, we did not have time to address all of Amendment 11, let alone get into potential new alternatives. So this was forwarded to the council level because there was not time to discuss it at the scallop committee meeting. In a nutshell, it is a request to consider adding into Amendment 11 a mechanism to allow sectors for the limited access fishery. You are aware of this discussion. We have had it at the council level in the past as well as at the committee level. There were motions, I believe it was at the September council meeting, that failed to include this into Amendment 11 at that point and instead to form a sector committee to address this on a more holistic basis for all fisheries. But again, this information is being submitted again for the council to consider. But again, we can get to it after we get through Amendment 11. Document number 10 is another correspondence from the chair of the General Category Advisory Panel. Basically some basic input and emphasis on the council considering the advisory panel recommendations seriously as preferred alternatives. And there is mention of one potentially new alternative that I have listed in the decision document that we can consider once we get through all of the Amendment 11 alternatives that are already in the document. Lastly, document number 11 is another correspondence from the Associated Fisheries of Maine. In general, there's some input about consideration of preferred alternatives in this letter, as well as two, again, potentially new alternatives for consideration to add to Amendment 11, which, again, I will explain that have been included in the decision document for later. The only other thing I would point out is that the Enforcement Committee discussed on Monday at their meeting, we do have an enforcement analysis component of Amendment 11. It's not in the document right now, but under the Enforcement tab, document number 18 is the draft enforcement analysis that was prepared by the Office of Law Enforcement at the National Marine Fisheries Service. And the Enforcement Committee, as I understand it, didn't have a lot of time at their meeting on Monday to go through it, but the plan is to basically take that document and integrate it into Amendment 11. It is there for your reference. I wouldn't point out really any big surprises with this analysis. It's pretty standard of the input you would expect from enforcement. So that is it. One more thing. There's the Scallop Survey Advisory Panel status sheet at the very end, which will be the next agenda item after we get through Amendment 11. And there's no council action required, but there will be an update, I believe, from the chair of that panel, Ron Smolowitz, and there's some information there about the status and update from that panel. But I think that's it. The plan was then to go back to the decision document, and I can run us through basically the list of decisions before you today very quickly so you have a better sense of really what's in front of you and all the decisions that we can hopefully get through, and then we can go back to the beginning and kind of go decision by decision, if that sounds reasonable to people. Are there any questions, and I can just keep going?
No, I think we just dive right into starting the process here.
Okay, so I would recommend taking out document number 4, the decision document, and perhaps document number 7, which is the committee meeting summary, to have those handy as we try to get through this. And again, as I mentioned, I'll just take 5 minutes or so to give you a sense of the dozen or more decisions that are before you. Again, I just want to remind everyone, you don't have to select preferred alternatives. It's not a requirement.
Deirdre.
It's certainly... Oh.
Sorry. We've had over 23 public meetings on this document. Council's had it for over a week, week and a half, 10 days. I think we should just get right into decision number 1.
Great. Hopefully everybody's prepared. That sounds good to me. Okay, decision number 1 starts on the first page of the decision document. And it is a big decision. We talked at the last committee meeting about it's a little awkward, which decision do you take first? And the method we used at the committee level anyway was to discuss the allocation percentage between the two scallop fisheries. And it's sometimes difficult to make a decision about that without knowing the pool of participants you may later decide with limited entry. But in a way, it's kind of a chicken or the egg type of discussion, so we can try this way, and hopefully it ended up finally working at the committee level. So basically the first question is, does the council want to identify a specific percent of total scallop TAC that would be allocated to the general category fishery in future years, or maintain the no action, which does not specify a specific hard TAC, instead uses an estimate that potentially the general category sector could under or over harvest. The description of the alternative is there for you on the first page. The advisory panel recommendation from the general category advisors was to recommend 11%. That passed by consensus. The advisors did not have time, that is, the scallop advisors didn't have time to address this issue as an individual body, so there really is no recommendation from them at this point, but that was just because there wasn't time. The committee considered all the input from the advisors and analyses in the document, and they ended up recommending 5% be identified as preferred. You can find the discussion at the committee level is related to motion number 1. There was a motion at one point to consider 7% that ultimately failed, but there is some background input from the public and committee members in your meeting summary that could help you get a better sense of what the discussion was. I would say we took a lot of public comment at the committee meeting on this topic, and there was a lot of discussion. We spent a good part of the day talking about this. The impacts are pretty expected in terms of the economic impacts. There's a lot of analyses in Section 5.4.11, 20, 30 pages or so about the different impacts on the different sectors in terms of future allocations and so forth, and what that means for each component of the fishery as well as potentially on an individual basis. And unless I can go through some of that now, or if people have gotten a good sense of that, before this meeting, we can just start the discussion.
Yeah, Dave, you have a motion from the committee?
Yeah. I don't know if what Karen has anything at this point, but the committee motion is to select 5% allocation of the total available scallop harvest to the general category as the preferred alternative.
Okay, that was a committee motion. It does not require a second discussion on the motion. Dr. Pierce.
Just a clarification as to how we're moving forward, Mr. Chairman. Are we going to be voting on the motions that came directly out of the committee? And if that's so, do all of those motions adequately address the specific decisions that have been described in the document being used by us this morning? For example, this is a motion just to go with the preferred alternative, but What about the rest of the structure? So I turn to you for guidance, Mr. Chairman, as to how we're supposed to move forward.
Yeah, the committee, I don't believe the committee made it through all the decisions that are required for this amendment. But I think as a starting point, we'll start with what the committee did recommend to the council for motions, work through those, and then we'll attend to any other issues that are outstanding to see if the council wants to identify a preferred alternative for those, unless there's objection. Okay. Anyone on the council? Questions, comments to the motion? Tom Hill.
Yeah, I just wondered if Deidre might give a brief description of the, if I can say this right, the relationship between choosing the percentage allocation and the later decisions we're going to make about who's going to participate. Seems to me there's an integral link, and I'm a little troubled about choosing this and then later having a limited entry criteria that is fairly broad and its implications. And you pick 5% or 7 or 10, whatever the number is that the council might pick, and then later you pick a limited entry criteria without the integral link between the two, and doom the small boat fishery to being put in the same category as other fisheries we've experienced recently, where the individuals can't make a living because the pie is spread so thin that people will automatically demand consolidation. And so I'm having trouble with the it's not that I object to the way the document's laid out, but I'd like to have a better idea as to the link. My first reaction was almost like to table this until we actually talked about who's in first, because I think that's a core issue in terms of the number of participants. I'd really like to know what 5% means to who's in, so we know, and whether the qualification criteria is tiered so that the people who are full-time participants today are full-time participants in the future, and those people who are modest participants now would be qualified as modest participants in the future in terms of their impact in the fishery. Because otherwise, while we're just choosing what seems to be intuitively right or feels good, without it being integrated into the whole. Anyways, that's my 10 cents worth, and I'm feeling a little uncomfortable, but I'm not a member of the committee now, so I'm presuming the committee members know how that works, and I'd like an explanation so that I'm comfortable that this is the right thing to do. Because it isn't just about history here, it's about making sure that when done, the fishery is whole in the context of how it's going to work into the future, so we don't revisit, so that the council doesn't revisit it a year or two from now saying, uh-oh.
Thanks, Tom. Dave?
Just to respond to that's exactly what Deidre was saying. The dilemma of what you take first was a difficult thing to decide, and you do have to look through the series of decisions that you're going to have to make to see what you've created in the end. And our feeling was taking this first decision, how big a chunk of the pie should be essentially reserved for the general category, and then build off of that. And if you look ahead, you know, the committee recommended following this, the 1,000-pound criteria and the 11-year time frame for qualification. So it is a fairly broad, fairly inclusive cut. But then there are subsequent decisions that talk about, okay, now who within this group gets how much, and it could be tiered, it could be individual allocation. But certainly as you make this decision, you have to be mindful of the subsequent ones. And I just don't think we could do it the other way, but, you know, you still end up with the same problem. You have to think about you have to have that big picture view in mind as you make each of these individual decisions, because it does potentially pen you in to someplace you don't want to be if you're not thinking it through.
Deirdre?
Without taking very long, might help Tom as well, as I can point out a few tables in both the decision document and in the main document that try to describe how they're interrelated and the potential impacts. For example, Table 2 of the decision document on page 5, which is part of the next decision, shows you the range of potential participants that would qualify under the different scenarios. The range goes from 143 at the most restrictive to 705 vessels at the least restrictive. Just to point out, the preferred alternative from the committee level that Dave was just describing was around 459 vessels. And a lot of the documents, actually, the tables starting table 74 on page 213 and the several pages after that show you what that means in terms of individual potential allocations for the different percentage ranges. And I can go through it in more detail. But in general, of course, you know, the smaller the percentage, the higher the impacts for those qualifiers.
Tom?
That's it. But that means that we are, if I'm not trying to be cute, I'm just pointing out the inevitable convergence at the end. And I'm not saying this is the wrong order. What I'm trying to raise is, if we are responsible to the participants within the fishery, it will bind us to doing things. The decisions later need to be consistent with what we do earlier. And I just get the uncomfortable feeling based on, as I say, I'm not in the committee meetings, but having a qualification criteria that is so broad that binds you then to do things later, I just think we need to be cognizant of that as you choose each of these. And I'm raising it now because I think it's so easy for us to want to have the big tent, but then later on, the reality is that our council has done more often than not looked down the road a long ways and said, what will this actually do? And I don't say that disrespectfully. I just say that based on the history that we've got. We want to be really inclusive, and the end result is that we end up having all of the arguments for the social changes that everybody around here says they don't like, which is consolidation, permit stacking, arguments about people being put out of business because the conservation opportunities are so strict, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just really conscious of it at this point, and I'm trying to figure out a way that the participants that I care about in this small boat fishery actually don't take the short end of the stick.
Jim, was your hand up? Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand Tom's concerns, and I agree with him in large part. And I think the committee, in its work, addressed it in the same order that we're dealing with it now. And unfortunately, as we got later decisions that later decisions were made, I think that, at least for my part, I felt that this particular question might well have been revisited. And in that regard, and I'm not sure what you prefer as a protocol, because I am a member of the committee, but I would urge that we provide a substitute motion that makes this a 7% rather than 5 as the preferred alternative. And if that's in order for me to do that, I will make that as a motion. Is that okay?
You're free to make that motion.
Then I so move, and I'd like to speak to it after the...
Is there a second? Seconded by Mark Gibson. Jim?
And if I may, I refer everybody to a letter by Associated Fisheries of Maine. I think it's number 11 in the document. And it clarifies and clarified for me the method by which the allocations had been made in the past and how that operated. And I wasn't fully aware of how that worked when we visited this issue the first time. And as we looked at this issue, the basic arguments were you know, every percent that you go up will take down the limited entry fishery category. And in fact, I don't believe that's true. In the past, there was an assumption or presumption that the general category would take approximately 10% after that of a sort of a target level. And after that, the limited entry trips were calculated and allocated. And at the end of the fishing year, you see the results of that. You see what the limited entry trips caught, and you see what the general category caught, and you then get a percentage of the total that each one caught, and you had variations from 2% to 13% or something like that over the years. But it was always represented that if you allocated a higher number, that would knock the trips down. But in fact, I don't believe that's the case. I think what happens is if we were to, again, use that same procedure and allocated 10%, you would have roughly the same level of limited entry trips as you've had in the past. The calculation would be approximately the same. So I think that given that understanding, I think it's more appropriate for the council to look at a range of about 7%. It represents a reduction in the, how would you call it, the practical level of catch of the general category assumption, and it represents a kind of a buffer to assure that the limited entry category does have approximately the same level of number of trips that they have now. And to me, it also answers Tom's concern that you have, you set an amount, and then you later decide on who the qualifiers are, and all of a sudden you realize that the amount isn't enough for a normal fishery of that number of participants. So this actually increases the amount that those participants would have, and I think if you look at the charts, it makes a it results in a reasonable fishery as it's defined later by the preferred alternative. So if we follow the preferred alternatives later for who is involved in the fishery and the structure of what they're allowed to catch, it seems to me to calculate to a reasonable approximation of what the activity is at the present day. And it preserves a kind of an ability to have a part-time seasonal fishery by some and a relatively full-time dedicated fishery by others. So I think, in my view, it represents a more appropriate level and at the same time does not appreciably reduce what the limited access category would, the result of what they would get. Thank you.
To the motion to substitute, any other comments? Rodney.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we wrestled with this. And if you go back to the historic averages, 3% was the historic average of the general category fishery. And we gave them a little bit. We gave them 5%. 7%, I think, is going way beyond, especially if this fishery gets in trouble again. That's just my comment. Thank you.
Anyone else to this motion to substitute? Okay, I'm going to go to the audience. Bruce?
My name is Bruce Gibbs, Fish and Vessel, Atlantic Queen. I came here today, gentlemen, because I've been in this industry for 30-something years, and I've done it all. I've employed about 1,500 people. I've had 5 or 6 boats. I think I've had maybe 1 or 2 repair bills on all my boats. I've built, designed, and fished all my boats. I've done everything. I've worked 110, 120 hours a week. If you don't believe it, follow me. What I see happening here, and apparently what I hear, there's no possibility of no action in this. I'm going to finally speak my mind that I've been holding for many, many years. I'm going to give you a little list of what I've been representing and what seems to be you gentlemen, in all due respect, failed to see. I started fighting this stuff in the early 80s. Then I started making proposals in 88, fighting like hell to keep this industry honest. And it wasn't meant to be. And I can give you a lot of names who were doing, who were burying us. 1988, we landed 21 million pounds. Today, last year, I believe we landed 60 to 70 million pounds or more. This year, it's expected to be more than that. So I'm saying to myself, why are we having this action? Why are we putting the general category out of business? This country is founded on this kind of business. Why are we going by the way of the corporate world? That's what's happening to this whole damn world, and we all know it. The lobbying and the stuff that's being controlled in this country and around the world is shameful. I sit on the Waterways Committee in Chatham. We've got an issue going there on the same level, and that's disgusting. I'm ashamed of politics. I'm ashamed of all the work that's being done and all the wasted man hours going backwards. Because just like Tom said, he's concerned what's going to happen to the guys. I know for myself, as hard as I've worked, and I've worked to stay in this because I love this game. I love the adventure of fishing. I can do almost anything, but I don't want to do this. I can't do it because I don't want to do it mentally. What's happening here, gentlemen, is wrong. Absolutely wrong. If you pass this, I'll be lucky if I can pay my insurance bill in the boat. Never mind. I've lost my home, my boats, everything I ever worked for years ago because I wouldn't be dishonest. I see all the crooks, and I'm, you know, the shoe fits where. I'm not trying to accuse everybody in this industry. There's some good people in this industry. But they're also few and far between. And what's happening here, you gentlemen are allowing this to happen so they can continue to steal, they can continue to make the rules and sit in the councils and govern their little, just like the Congress can vote their own pay raises. That's what's happening here. And it's a damn shame. I want to just, it says 1988, 21 million pounds, 2006, 60 to 70 million pounds. Why are we doing this? Limited entry? Why? 1988, I've got the papers all back there. Half of the city's sea scallops on the New Bedford Standard Times, on the black market, on and on. Same year, Gibbs goes to the council as a proposal to stop this. I mean, I've been doing this, fighting this stuff for years and years. And I haven't been doing a lot of stuff on Amendment 11 because partway through it, I got so disgusted, I finally walked out. I couldn't deal with it any longer. I had to go feed my family. I just could not spend any more time here. Proposal, and I, you know, I was one of the men, the guys that did, made a proposal on Amendment 4 to try and stop some of this. But nothing seems to stop it. The big guys, going to annihilate the small guys, just like the Indians, the same damn way. More promises. What you're doing is you're eradicating a way of life. This is just another one. I mean, just yesterday, this gentleman has the paper. Patrick says, this fishing industry is a disaster. It is. But the scallop industry is not. This is ridiculous. We're making all these proposals and regulations for nothing. I could go on and on and on. And I would ask all you gentlemen to use your conscience and really think deep. What drives you? Is it honesty? Because I could give you a lesson in that. And it pays big time. It hurts. It's crippled me. And I'm ashamed of the way this world is going. And I don't want to be a part of it. And I fight and I fight and I fight for the right reasons. And I wish some of you people would do the same.
Anyone else? Dave Farula.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. David Farula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. As we've been I keep saying this. Every time I come up here, I start this way, and it has probably been 25 meetings. We understand the need to ensure access for true historical participants here, a reasonable allocation to the local opportunistic day boat fleets, some tiering to allow for incidental catches, you know, a recognition of the episodic fishery in the northern Gulf of Maine. But when you look through the document, what you see, if you look at page 133, is there's permit holders from 21 different states. All the coastal states except for California and Oregon hold general category scallop permits. There's even a category 1A from Hawaii. If you look at pages 119 to 131, there's a map which shows the profusion of general category effort from 96 to 04. It just dots, and you see more and more fishing. A new directed full-time fishery that's grown up over the last 2 or 3 years is not consistent with the vision statement. That's not what the council was about. We think in terms of overall allocation that the year to look at, the year really to focus on, is 2004, which is the year of the control date when the general category was caught 5.5 1/4%. At that time, the council recognized there was an issue. Mr. Hill made the motion for the control date. Not on behalf of the committee, I believe. It was on behalf of himself when he got frustrated because the council didn't take action back then to do more. And that 5%, again, is higher than it had been previously. So that looks like the committee wrestled with this. There's just nothing in the vision statement, respectfully, that talks about a fundamental reallocation of the resource over a long term to a new directed fleet that entered into this open access component during a time period when there were no controls, but people recognized there needed to be. This happened, of course, during a cyclical high that's turning down. There should be no doubt about that. I mean, I think many of the general category fishermen who were at the meeting said we need more days because there's no scallops out there where we've been fishing. The document at page 42 talks about allowing for higher than historical norms if the resource remains healthy. You can't pick and make your decisions based on a cyclical high. And we understand that people have made investments. The limited access fleet in 1994 had very little when this all started. And they built it back and they invested in the fishery. And they're going to have to take the hit of a downturn. So, again, a modest allocation of up to 5%. We recognize the issues in the northern Gulf of Maine. We do think it's important to consider some sort of tiering to allow people to participate the way they've been participating. Incidental catches, the episodic fisheries. When the scallop resource is high at that 5%, people will do better because they'll get a higher percentage. It's a fixed percentage. And again, we know that you all have made this a priority to move this along. It's been difficult. Committee's wrestled with this and the council's wrestled with this. So thanks for your consideration.
Anyone else? Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. We've probably had 100 meetings because we brought this up to the table in August of 1999, and we've been struggling with it ever since. And this is, we're just preparing a public hearing document. It seems we always, especially with scallops, seem to come back to the committee as a whole and rediscuss every issue. As far as the limited access fleet's concerned, I think we have a good argument that we'll make during public comments. That 3% is the historic long-term norm. 3% will provide for the traditional fishery. What I think the council members need to do today is look at what you hope to accomplish with this. If, in fact, you want to protect the traditional fishery, the guys that incidentally catch scallops, the guys that when scallops were abundant in their particular area near shore, they were able to go out and land as many as 400 pounds, you need to look at each of the measures in the document. But be aware that several things have occurred recently that we haven't discussed that are significant. I do not think there's any validity to the argument that 10% of the resource was set aside for general category. Most of the landings in 2003, 4, and 5 in the Mid-Atlantic were from unsurveyed areas. And those areas were probably fished at an F higher than 1. They were wiped out. That's what's going to happen in New England. The two main controls on general category in New England were the under-the-ground fish plan, the Southern New England exemption area, and the channel area. Both of those now are wide open to general category fishing. What's going to happen if you allocate scallops, whatever the percentage is, 3%, 5%, 7%, guys are going to go out and target scallops on their general category days and wipe out those inshore areas. And then we're going to have the same problem that we've had in the past. There won't be scallops available. You know, with a wide open fishery, traditionally, they only had 1% because the areas were never allowed to rebuild. I think there's going to have to be next steps to protect inshore areas for general category scallop fishing. We're not going to accomplish that here. What we want to make sure that you do here is set up a system so that we could grow more scallops like we've done offshore in the special access areas in the inshore areas and have the opportunity for people to catch them. And you're going to have to decide whether that opportunity is going to be to 30 or 40 boats to land a lot of scallops, or whether it's going to allow people that have other fishery permits in other fisheries to land them incidentally. If you looked at the documents, that's a significant portion of income. What we learn in farming is that if you take a 10% reduction, for example, in your price, you have a 40% loss in your profit. The scallop catch is very important for small boats at that small amount. If that is taken and allocated to other people, that's going to hit a broad fleet. That's the issue that you guys need to focus on here and not to revisit the decisions that have been made, but look more at some of the decisions that have not been made. So I really think that 7% is going to send the wrong signal to the public. You're not going to get the necessary type of information. And when you come back, and I think it's just a bad motion and has no basis in scientific fact. We have much more accurate assessments of the scallops now. We're moving into the areas that we missed in previous surveys, and our tolerances are narrower and narrower, and the limited access fleet is going to take a big hit at whatever percentage allocate to the general category above the 3%.
Bob Keys.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Keyes. I'm a general category fisherman from Chatham, Mass. I'd just like to say that up to this point, the main decision that we're using to base whatever percent of an allocation has been that the general category was never developed or never intended to be anything more than a supplemental income bycatch fishery. It goes all the way back from, Framework 18. It's written in the document, Framework 18, that the general category was meant to be nothing more than a bycatch or supplemental income fishery, and therefore we should keep it that way. You've heard, if you're at the last Oversight Committee meeting, Ron Smolowitz, Billy Wells, the same crew has just been harping on that one particular fact, supposed fact. And I know that Mr. Howard said at one council meeting that we're really not bound to pass amendments and we should look at the situation today and deal with the situation that we are now in. However, it's despite this advice, you can see what's going on here. We're still basing this allocation percentage on this false interpretation of Amendment 4. And Amendment 4 is really very clear about it. I have some of the Amendment 4 paperwork here, and it mentions it throughout the document. It says the 400-pound, 50 U.S. bushel trip limit is, for one thing, for non-qualifying vessels, and it says general permit vessels may fish for scallops or possess and land them as bycatch. That's very clear. It's made for two reasons. And to see to see it all come back to this, it's kind of like if you just keep repeating a lie over and over again and hire lawyers and lobbyists and consultants to push this one fact, all of a sudden everyone starts believing it. And it's really not the case. And if you want to know the truth, you have to go to the document. Go to the document, the Amendment 4 document, where this was, where the law is written, and tell me otherwise. Furthermore, I've talked to council members who were involved in the process back then. Billy Amaru, who now lives in Chatham, he was part of the council back then, and he says no doubt about it. It was made for two reasons. It was made for a directed fishery on scallops or a bycatch fishery, depending on how you wanted to use it. Lou Goodrow, I talked to him last week. He was a staff person for the council back in the 90s, early 90s for Amendment 4. And he informs me that in the first phase of Amendment 4, when talking about the general category, when it was first brought up, there was actual talk of a Gulf of Maine and North Carolina / Virginia management areas for scallops, for the directed fishery on scallops only. It didn't pass due to enforcement reasons, but out of that came, as Lou puts it, this all-encompassing general category fishery. And it was definitely meant, in a large part, to accommodate this directed fishery for scallops, depending upon resource conditions. And it's disheartening for someone sitting in the audience and listening to these people who sit on the council and who are chairman of committees and to come out and say, matter-of-factly, this is why this fishery was made. And then when you talk to these people who are actually there writing the document and they, you know, they say something completely different, and now we're basing our decisions on that, it's kind of scary, really. Lou says that you have to sort of forgive these people who refer to this as a bycatch fishery because they were probably not there in the beginning stages of Amendment 4. But here we are now, and we're still talking about it every meeting, and it's being brought up again and again that, oh, Amendment 4 is never meant for this. And instead we have this, you refer to the vision statement now. And the vision statement does not say we should keep general category at the levels it was when there were no scallops near shore. It does not ever say the general category should not grow to be a successful directed day boat fishery. It says that we should keep to the historical character of the day boat fishery. There's a lot about this day boat fishery that is great. It's a small boat fishery. I take my 10-year-old son out on the boat with me every day when I fish in the summer. He just bought a new dirt bike last week that he earned from shucking scallops on my boat. That's the historical nature of this fishery that we need to preserve. And really, times have just changed. I mean, back in Amendment 4, when they were developing the document, back then they thought the maximum sustainable catch would be approximately 29 million pounds. Now we're looking at a sustainable catch over the last 6 years of about 53 million pounds. That's nearly twice as much, and the limited access fleet has grown accordingly, and the general category fleet should be allowed to grow. This is not a biological question. It's just an allocation question. And, again, what's good for one is good for the other, and the general category should be able to grow just like the limited access fleet has. About this biological issue, there's been, and Ron has just mentioned it too, this idea that, the general category have wiped out the nearshore areas. First of all, in New England, that's not true, and I don't want to spend much time on that, but the limited access guys have landed far more scallops than general category guys from nearshore areas, and they've done it in a loophole, taking advantage of loopholes and other reasons, but I don't really want to go there. But one big reason that the general category has supposedly wiped out the nearshore areas, or that they fish in the nearshore areas, is they have not been allowed to fish in the access areas. They've been allowed 2%. I mean, what, the elephant trunk lasted 2 weeks, I think. If we were allowed access area rights, we would leave the nearshore areas alone. We could, if we increase our rights to the access areas, then it would directly decrease the fishing effort in the nearshore areas. And one other biological issue, and this is throughout the document, it mentions how there's perhaps more incentive for the general category vessels to fish in suboptimal areas because we have a smaller boat and less fuel bills and lower overhead. whereas a bigger limited access boat, it would not be practical for them to fish in such areas. This is false. This is, you see it all the time as a fisherman out there. I'll see boats who are towing 2 15-foot dredges with 30 feet of dredge width. They can make money where I can't. It's a simple mathematical. I have an 8-foot dredge. They have 30 feet of sweep. They can fish these areas and make money in suboptimal areas where I can't, and they do that. Lastly here, I want to point out the fact that this is also all through the document that it states how the limited access vessels are more dependent on scallops than perhaps the general category vessels. Implying that, well, they say it over and over again, that the limited access vessels don't hold other limited access permits. I don't hold any limited access permits. This table here from the NARO permit database, it shows, it lists the limited access permits and what other limited access permits they hold. It shows that there are 334 limited access scallop permits. And then it lists all the other limited access permits they have and goes on, you know, lists them all separately, 48 multi-species, 176 monkfish, blah, blah, blah. But out of these 334 vessels, 15 of them don't hold any other limited access permits. I don't know, you know, if this was just overlooked, if this is a plain-faced lie, but these are the facts from this permit database table. Thank you.
Jim? And then we're going to come back to the council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. A couple of points I'd like to make with regard to this motion. And it first goes back to the 24 meetings that we've had. You've heard other comments say how many meetings they've attended. I can tell you I've been at least 20 years of these meetings, so this does go on a long way. But one of the things I think that we surfaced at this table and at these 24 recent meetings, time and time again, is that usually the traditional general category fisherman is more concerned with the numbers of people who are going to qualify in the future for this fishery as opposed to how many pounds or how many percentage points of a TAC they're going to receive. That seems to be the real concern for the guys that you want to call a traditional general category fisherman. Most of the others are more interested in how much money they're going to be able to make out of this above and beyond, you know, what they feel that they should have it set aside for them. If you look at Table 1 in this document, that shows the percentage of catch and how it relates to the overall catch over the years. One thing that's apparently missing to me anyways is that there is no reflection of the numbers of vessels that were participating in those particular years. That information is obviously available, but it's not pinned to this particular table. So if you look back in 1994, you might find that you had 50 or 60 or how many catching that percentage of that catch. If you look at the 14% that I think was the highest number in the most recent year, see how many vessels had that share. This is where your growth has come. It's come in sheer numbers, sheer weight, and it's gotten to a point where the limited access fishery and the resource can't continue to bear that weight. Catch per unit of effort, even Bob mentioned that it seems to have dropped off inshore. Well, whether that's due to the proliferation of the general category vessels and the effort that they've expended inshore, we'll never know that. But I will tell you one thing, that if it doesn't start to rebound, and if you do qualify large numbers that won't be able to survive inshore, the next step you're going to be facing is a safety issue where the boats are going to come before you, the general category boats are going to come before you and say, we can't catch our 400 pounds a day. We need to go out for 1,000 pounds a day or 2,000 pounds a day. And when we do that, we need bigger vessels just to be safe. This is something that should have been headed off at the PDT a long time ago. Several of us tried to do so and tried to warn them. Probably their thought was is that they could serve some people well by allowing this fishery to grow. There seemed to be some room for growth, particularly when the resource started to rebound. But as you've already heard from Ron Smolowitz and David Frula made a good presentation on this, we've already taken the bloom off that rose. And as in other fisheries and as other times goes by, we're on a downward slide again now. How fast we slide is going to be determined by what you decide here at this meeting and future meetings as regarding total number of vessels that are going to qualify. As regarding Amendment 4, when we did Amendment 4 and the rest of the amendments, none of them could foresee what we're looking at now. We heard figures of 3,000 general category permits. If you look at Table 2, there's numbers there that reflect over 4,000 permits at some particular point in time. I mean, we're not just talking 10 here, 20 there. We're talking 1,000 here, 1,000 there. And at some point, you're going to have to base it on what would be a rational amount of TAC set aside for a rational number of vessels participating in a general category fishery. I'm not looking to exclude anyone, but, Jesus, we can't just keep taking them in. This is kind of reminiscent of what we're doing with our immigration policy. So if you want to be guilty of that particular step, be my guest. But I hope you really take time to reflect on what the true percentage is that should be or could be allocated to this fishery. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council on the motion to substitute Dana Rice.
Well, I guess speaking to the briefly, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Speaking to the motion to substitute, 7% would be great for me to allocate to this, but I urge everybody at the council to consider all of the work that the committee has put into this. What worries me in this process right now where we're going is we've all seen this happen before. On the first motion to come up, we get all tied up and we bog ourselves down. 5 or 7%, I urge the council to call the question, Mr. Chairman, and vote whatever percentage and go forward. There are some unanswered questions in this in preferred motions that we need to work with, but the SCALP committee has worked very hard. They can't be all things to all people in this process, is some people's concern. What we are talking about, what I'm talking about in this process is preserving a general category fishery. It doesn't make any difference whether it's whose version of a general category fishery it is. It's an important resource, and I just hope that we don't get bogged down on every one of these preferred motions and waste this opportunity to go forward, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Are you moving the question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second? Second is John Nelson, non-debatable. All those in favor of moving the question, the motion to substitute, raise your hand. Sorry, on the question. 15, okay. All those in favor on the motion to substitute, please raise your hand. Eight, opposed. Nine, the motion to substitute fails. 8-9, back on the main motion. Is there a second? Second, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Okay, the question's moved. All those in favor of the main motion, please raise your hand. Okay. Opposed? One opposed, one abstention. Motion, the main motion carries 15-1-1. Pat?
I'm not quite sure where to raise this, so let me put it out there and you can tell me when we might talk about it or talk about it now. All of the proposals are, I think anyway, all the proposals in the amendment propose that once an allocation is used up, whatever allocation the council decides on recommending, that fishing continue at the 40-pound level for everybody, basically, everybody who's permitted. I think we need to think about how that works, just so that everybody's clear. Does that then come off of the total allocation to the scallop fishery? And this, you know, this wasn't important before you started to talk about allocations and before the change to the Magnuson Act, which required this issue of accountability. But I think you need to think about when the general category is stops fishing, where those additional landings are attributed within the process. So you can think about the accountability issue and so that there's no confusion in the future about where those landings are coming from.
Dave or Deirdre, did the committee or any of the meetings you've been involved in, Deirdre, address this issue?
I guess it's yes and no. During scoping, we did hear about considering an incidental, basically changing the incidental catch level to zero for concerns Pat was talking about in terms of their effects on mortality. That is in a considered and rejected section at this point because the committee did not support revisiting the incidental catch level in this amendment. So we haven't done a whole lot of analysis about what changing that incidental catch level would mean for the fisheries and the resource. So far, the PDT has always stated that an incidental level remaining at 40% has not been a concern for overall mortality. Of course, after Amendment 11, depending on how things go, the PDT can always revisit that and consider recommending more precautionary future allocations to account for some of that potential mortality. But to date, so far, landings would not be removed from any sort of TAC or accounting from incidental catch. They would just be landings under incidental catch, not to be deducted in any way.
Yeah, that's a problem, because the overall TAC needs to be set based on mortality targets, which needs to take into account all the sources of mortality. And I don't think it's just a question of whether or not they're currently contributing something that the PDT might consider excess mortality to the process, so much as that an accounting question. Where do they come from? They need to come from somewhere. Now, in other fisheries in the region where we have a situation where you're trying to achieve some sort of allocation, and incidental landings are allowed after, for example, a TAC is achieved, then we close at, say, 80% or 90% instead of closing at 100% and allowing those landings to accrue after that. Frankly, my suggestion would just be to acknowledge that the incidental landings come off the top, come off the overall scallop TAC, just like the general category allocation does. But I think you have to be explicit about it.
Dave Capel.
Yeah, Deidre, is there a table that you can reference for us maybe that tells how much has been landed at the 40 pounds? You know, is it 1%, 0.5% of the total? Spend an hour thumbing through the
document. There is no permit to land under 40 pounds,
right.
So it's not like we could just pull it by permit type. There are tables in here that show, in general, I'll have to look a little bit myself, but that have lower landing levels.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think the solution is to just say, you know, if it's less than 1%, set aside 1% for the 40-pound and under category off the top and be done with it. I mean, that handles the accounting aspect of it. And if it grows to over 1%, we'll have to revisit it. But I don't think it's going to because it's all these boats that are ground fish boats or whatever that catch a couple dozen scallops. I mean, it just doesn't amount to anything. But I understand Pat's concern that, you know, it has to add up to 100%. It can't add up to 101%. So, you know, we may have to just say, okay, the 40-pound and under gets 1% of the total, and if for some reason it exceeds it, it closes or something. But, I mean, there should be a way to handle this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I might ask Pat, do you need an actual number, or can it be the fact that the landings of the incidental catch should come off the top of the tack, and that's the wording? Given that, Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to that effect that the incidental catch amount should come off the top of the TAC.
Made by Rip Cunningham, seconded by Jim Salisbury. Discussion? Phil Rule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just a little confused. Are we taking this off the top of the total TAC, or are we taking this off of the general category TAC that we're allocating? The reason I ask is I would assume, I haven't seen really the numbers on this, but I would assume the majority of these landings will be from general category boats. I don't really fathom limited access boats going out for 40 pounds. So why are we charging the full TAC to the fleet that probably is not doing it? I mean, I'm a little confused on where this is.
I believe the intent of the motion is to take it off the total, the big number, not off the general category allocation. I believe that's the intent of the motion. Rodney?
Yeah, it was basically the same thing Phil said. But the other thing, are we going to put a percentage to this? Right now it just says take the catch off. Should we allow them 1%? Is that going to be included in this motion?
Well, the motion doesn't have a percentage.
That's what I'm saying.
And it was intentionally, I think, left blank.
Okay.
Deirdre?
I just have a question and a point, I guess. We have to be very careful about the term tack and so forth. Keep in mind that the scallop fishery is not under a total tack. The landings and harvest are projected, and then allocations are made to the fishery in hopes that it reaches that. So the motion as it reads right now is a little problematic in how the PDT would actually do that. From when Pat was talking before, I was sort of under the impression that in Framework 19, for example, the PDT will project some sort of mortality expected from incidental landings that would come off the projected total harvest for that fishing year, and then we would start the division of allocations between the two fisheries. I just think we have to keep that in mind.
Pat Kirkle.
Well, Deirdre's certainly right. There's not an overall total TAC, but I was looking at the decision document under Decision 1, which says, does the council want to identify a specific percentage of the total scallop TAC? So the portion that the council just decided about the 5% is referenced that way. And, you know, just to be consistent, it seems to make sense to do the same.
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the rationale of the motion is that it would come off the top of the total TAC, or however you want to define that. But the purpose is that it's a great portion of the incidental catches, not just by the general category, but it's by the groundfish fishery and others. And I think that it's more appropriate because that is basically the bycatch of other fisheries that it comes off the top. I mean, it's neither caused by nor by neither the general category nor the limited access fleet. So it should come off the top. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Limited comments from the audience. Dave Rule.
David Frula, Fisheries Survival Fund. Just two brief points. One is it may want to be clarified to be the limited incidental catch amount of 40 pounds, because that would seem to be something that is a truly incidental as opposed to sort of a sub-tier of a more intensive general category fishery. If you're talking about that under 40-pound amount. Also, I guess these are incidental catches off – I guess what's going to ultimately be some sort of general category, limited access general category fishing. Because if you're out there on a general category day or on your general category allocation, that should come out of, you know, if you're fishing under that permit, your new limited access general category permit, that shouldn't be included here. This should just be the 40-pound incidental.
Anyone else? Tom?
Tom Swim, New London Seafood. I'm a little confused here because we're actually in the offshore trawlers, the people that catch the incidental. catch, and it, I don't see as it would be relevant to the general category scallop. At least what we do wouldn't be relevant to the general category fishing. I don't know whether we'll end up with general category permits or not, depending on what, you know, the way the things that we fall in between the two proposals that I've seen so far. But it, you do have to realize that if you cut off the, it's not that we're not going to catch them, it's we're not going to be able to land the 40 pounds if there's a cutoff in that amount. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Any further discussion? Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering whether it would, in terms of a perfection of the motion, whether it would be clearer, make more sense if it said the projected incidental catch would come off, because that would indicate that it would be done ahead of time rather than something after the fact when it was calculated. If that's the case, I would like to make a perfection.
The seconder all right with that? Okay, the motion's been perfected. Any further comments, questions? Phil Rule.
Just trying to wrap my head around it. I understand what Jim says, so I have to wonder when you go back in the document, all the analysis that was done before, that where would the incidental have been listed? Because it would be my thinking we'd change that in 04 or something when we made that the differential there. So prior to that, would 40-pound listings would have been under general category or would have been under – where is it in the analysis, I guess? I'm not sure. My thinking is it would be under general.
If I'm following you, you know, the general category permit still is open access, so – any vessel that may have had a general category permit and happened to land less than 40 pounds, those would be in the dealer data as general category landings. But if they had a VMS, you know, and then it would break down whether they had VMS or not. Does that answer your question?
Somewhat. I think my point would be in the analysis that's in front of us for what was landed from 96 or whatever, 94 to 04, if the 40 pound increments were landed, they were attributed to the general category fleet.
If they had a permit, but there are going to be other vessels that didn't have a general category permit, perhaps that would have been permitted to land up to 40 pounds of scallops.
And where would that have been? That's what I'm wondering. What would that have been attributed to?
Nothing. It hasn't been accounted that way in terms of impacts on the scallop resource. And the total, because there is no total tack right now. We're not monitoring certain portions of the tack because there isn't one in an indirect way.
Dave?
You know, I don't think that's altogether accurate because you can't land a scallop without a general category permit. So, you know, not legally anyway. I mean, so if there's any other landings out there, they're illegal landings. But so anything that was landed was attributed to the general category. The only way you're going to get the breakout is for this past year when there was, if you had under 40 pounds, you didn't need a VMS. You were allowed over 40 if you had a VMS. So this past year, you're probably going to have some way of figuring out who landed under 40 pounds based on whether they had a VMS or not, but only some way, because some people could have landed under 40 pounds and still had a VMS. So it's not going to be clear cut. But going forward from here on in, anybody who is going to have a different permit category that has under 40 pounds, because they're not going to qualify. And then you will be able to track what that small number is.
Jim and then John Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think just to clarify Dave's remarks, I think there are groundfish vessels that do not have general category VMS permits, but they have, you know, they have a bycatch of 40 pounds. Those would not have been attributed to the general category, but they would have been de facto taken off the total catch. So, well, I guess you may be right that everybody has to have a permit. that lands them, but it's not the general category VMS permit. So they would have been, I would presume, would have their whatever that catch was from, say, a groundfish vessel wouldn't have been attributed to the general category. Thank you.
John Nelson.
Call a question, Mr. Chairman.
I was about to call a question. I'm going to call a question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. On the motion, right. Opposed. One. Abstentions. Okay. 14-1. The motion carries. Dave, what's the next one we're going to tackle?
Measures to control mortality in the general category, essentially limited entry. So the motion, are you looking for a break period here or you want to do this?
Let's do this one.
Okay. So the motion would be identify limited entry as the preferred alternative to the to control capacity and mortality in the general category fishery.
And that was a motion of the committee?
Yes.
Okay. Discussion on the motion. Dave Preble.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm concerned on the fifth question related to this motion. And I admit that scallops is the fishery that I know the least about, but I am involved with sectors. And it appears in my reading of this that there are limitations on formations of sectors implied in this. I'm not sure that I'm correct, but it appears that way. And if that's the case, then that is in variance with what the Sector Allocation Committee wants, which is for sectors to go ahead while we're proceeding with our deliberations on formation of sectors. And to the extent that we can, I'd like to eliminate any limitations expressed or implied in this document on the formation of sectors in the scallop or any other fishery for that matter. Thank you.
Okay. Rip?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if Deirdre was going to ask the same question, but I guess, and maybe I should ask that to the scallop chair, are we taking this decision as a whole, all of the five, or we're on actually just the first of that limited entry, and then we will take each step subsequent to that?
Yeah, the intention was to take individual steps.
Thank you.
Any further comment on the motion? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. All those in favor, please raise your hand. It's unanimous. Okay. We'll take a 10-minute break. As we move forward, I just want to remind the audience and the council members that what we're doing today is putting together a document to go out to the public for comment. And while we're striving to identify preferred alternatives, and if possible to do that, to signal to the public that the council has a preference, we should be doing that. But in the event that we're split down the middle on an issue, I think we'll struggle and chew up a lot of time trying to identify a preferred alternative, and at a certain point we may have to make a determination we're not going to get there and that there's other decisions we need to entertain. The public comment process will help to define the views of the public and perhaps may help council members make decisions when we do come back in June for a final vote. Okay, Dave.
Okay. Well, the break helps to clarify some issues and gives us a chance to think out some details. And to the last motion, it became apparent during the break that with limited entry and presumably some qualification level, that this incidental catch level that we were going to take off the top essentially won't exist by non-permit holders. They would be required to have at least a general category permit, and so their landings would count under the general category. If you don't have a general category permit or a limited access permit, you can't sell scallops. So essentially, this taking off the top, there is nothing to take off the top.
So the motion we passed before the break, we need to revisit that and perhaps dispense with it.
Yeah, so I think if this is the appropriate action, being on the prevailing side, I would move to reconsider. And and omit the provision to take incidental catch off the top of the TAC or projected allowable catch.
I believe the first thing we need to do is decide whether we're going to reconsider the motion. Is that right? Okay, so you're moving to reconsider the previous motion. Is there a second? Seconded by Rodney. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Thirteen opposed. One. Two. Abstentions. Okay, the motion to reconsider carries. Okay, so now it's back on the board. Jim Salisbury.
Then I'd like some clarification, because I know during the break we had some discussion about this, because you have, in effect, two. Well, they're not general category permits. They're just called general scallop permits. Now, that's distinct from a general category permit that may be coming as a result of this action. But you had a general scallop permit that had a requirement for a VMS, and you had one that didn't. And sort of common sense conception is that the general category scallopers, people who were targeting scallops and were allowed up to 400 pounds a day, had to have a VMS. The ones who were, say, ground fish or doing other activities could have 40 pounds. And so in our minds, those are not general category scallop fishermen. They're just other kinds of fishermen that have been allowed to catch, to retain scallops. And so if now we confuse this and say, well, they will have a general scallop permit in the future to, if you approve of a 40-pound or whatever bycatch limit, but they're not allowed 400 pounds, and they're not allowed whatever other measures that we put in here, so why wouldn't that portion of the catch be off the top? They're not general category scallop fishermen. They're not limited access scallop fishermen. So, to me, that's where the cause of this distinction is. And I don't think just saying, well, you will make them all general category fishermen doesn't seem to be the common sense solution to this. So I think you still have to deal with that bycatch in other fisheries, and to me it made sense to come off the top. If you are a ground fisherman, say, and you inadvertently qualify for a general category permit, then that portion would come out of it would be coming out of the category anyway, because you'd have that permit. But if you didn't have that permit, why would it be tacked onto that group? Seems to me that group, that just the general scallop fishery, would be responsible for that. Now, there is some thought that maybe you shouldn't have any incidental catch if you didn't qualify for this permit. That would be another alternative. But I don't see why you would revisit this idea that the non-general category permitted scallop vessels would have to give up whatever some of their percentage to fishermen that are are really not, that are neither general category license nor limited access license fishermen. Thank you.
Deirdre?
I'll take a stab at this because we did talk about it a little bit at the break, and I think part of the confusion, which is justified, is perhaps because a lot of this comes up when you start to think about the actual permitting and how these vessels would end up being permitted after limited entry. And maybe a lot of this confusion is because the document presently is not clear about, okay, if you decide to go with limited entry and you qualify a certain number of boats to be general category limited entry vessels, is that going to replace the current 1A versus 1B category, and basically anybody else is not permitted to fish and land under general category? Or is that going to be essentially, would it unaffect the 1A category, and would this amendment continue to permit the 1A category to exist? And perhaps the council should be more clear about its intent with that. And to Pat's point, if the council decides to allow a 1A permit, a more general up to 40 pounds to possess and land to exist, then it may make more sense to have a percentage of the total tack sort of reserved for that activity. However, if the council's intent, and I don't think we've really talked about this in too much detail, is to actually eliminate that permit category, and then after this amendment, vessels would not be permitted to land up to 40 pounds and actually sell it, then there wouldn't be a need, perhaps, to have that. The document right now, I was just looking through, under incidental catch, it describes that it would still be allowed up to 40 pounds, and right now it says, and this is my fault for not understanding, that the 40 pounds could be sold, and that is not true, as I learned at the break, that the 40 pounds, under incidental, you don't have to have a permit. You can land and keep it for personal use, but you cannot sell it unless you have a 1A permit.
John Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, the I'm not sure I followed all the details, but you know, that's fine, because mine was a little slightly different point than what Jim and Deidre were talking about, and that is, if we're allocating a certain percentage of the TAC to a group, at some point. I'm assuming they're going to be successful during the year, and they actually could be approaching that TAC. So at some point, don't we want to have a mechanism that says that the service says that's projected to be reached by a certain date, and after that date, you're going to have only incidental catch? So that's why I think that provision, if that's true, then I think that's why that provision still needs to be in there. So there's two scenarios here of why there should be that incidental catch.
Pat?
Well, I voted to reconsider because after our discussion at the break, I thought it still wasn't clear really what the council, whether or not we all were saying the same thing. Certainly I was confused. Right now there are three sort of categories. The limited access permit, the general category permits, and then the third group is the people that incidentally land scallops less than 40 pounds and aren't required to have a permit, but also are not allowed to sell their scallops. So I think it wasn't clear to me anyway where we would end up after the last vote, that there would still only be two permit categories, limited access and general, and that they would be allowed to land up to 40 pounds after their allocation was taken. But I don't know whether the council's intent was that they could sell that or not, because that's not consistent with an incidental permit. And then I agree that we need to take it off the top somehow, but the fact of the matter is that right now under the incidental permit, if you can't sell it, then we have no way of tracking it either. So if we're going to allow an incidental permit category where they can land up to the 40 pounds, do we want a permit for that category? So I thought it was worth revisiting just to answer those questions.
Dave Gatham.
Yeah. Well, first of all, somebody better check here because I think you can sell them. I was real specific on this when we voted on it because most of the ground fish fleet falls into the under 40-pound category. They get a permit that says non-VMS or something, unless you had a VMS. And it was to land and sell up to 40 pounds. And so the issue is, how is that 40 pounds going to be tracked? Because most of the ground fish fleet is going to fall into this under 40-pound category because they're not going to qualify under any of these scenarios for more than 40 pounds. And that's why I said take it off the top because it's going to be a real small number. I think you could assign it a percentage of 1%, and that would way more than cover it. But I don't. You know, we are going to have to do something with it because it's going to operate independent of this limited access general category fishery from here on in. Because I can see scenarios where the limited access general category fishery could close, but you're still going to have people ground fishing or squidding or whatever it is they do that might catch, you know, a handful of scallops. And I don't see any reason to have them throwing that 10, 15 pounds back. It isn't, you know... I just don't know why we'd be doing that. As far as tracking them, they're in the landings now, but they're in the landings as a general category permit. I mean, I've had a general category permit since they issued it. I think every fisherman here has for that reason, because every once in a while I get 10 or 15 pounds of scallops. But I know I'm not going to qualify for any of these permit categories, and I don't think most of the ground fish fleet is because they don't land many scallops, but they do land some. And I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be able to continue to do that.
Jane?
Well, I was just going to clarify what the permits are. Oh, you want Pete to do it? I got them right here. There's three. Yeah. There's a non-VMS. All right, go ahead. That's not hard.
I'm sorry. I misspoke. There is right now an incidental permit that allows up to 40 pounds to be landed and sold. Okay.
It's a non-VMS permit.
No, it's not a – it's separate from
it's
the
called non-VMS general scallop permit.
Okay.
To possess and land right. up to 40 pounds okay. and sell them, you don't have to have – the whole reason for that was
right.
for vessels that landed small amounts but like to sell them.
And didn't want
have to
buy
a VMS.
Right.
And then
right.
vessels without general scallop – permits. The regs say no scallop permit is required for a vessel that possesses or lands up to 40 pounds, provided such scallops are not intended to be sold, traded, or bartered.
Jim Salisbury.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think that clarifies the rule part of this, but I think as Dave points out, you know, ground fish vessels are allowed to land 40 pounds and sell them and under this permit. Now, there may be a conception here that, well, you know, ground fish vessels that landed enough to qualify for a scallop permit could still do that, and that would take care of those, and the ones that didn't, maybe we'll come out and say, well, they can't land any. But the problem with that conception is that if you're on a ground fish trip and you're going to land because you qualified for a general category permit, and you're going to think you're going to land 400 pounds, you're not going to be able to do that because you have to declare that you're on a scallop trip to do that. And if you do that, then your ground fish is impacted. So it really is not a way of sort of folding the ground fish fisheries bycatch into a general category permit. You really need a specific incidental catch category that allows non-scallop fishermen to land that portion of their catch, unless you want to just prohibit them from landing it at all, ever. But to me, to continue on as we have in the past with the ground fish fleet being able to land and sell 40 pounds or whatever number we pick, you actually have to have a separate category to do that, or else they become boxed in by the rules for declaring their trip. So I think our previous motion to consider that portion of the we'll call it the non-directed scallop fleet catch to be taken off the top still makes sense. Thank you.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess a question for the service. Is that catch trackable?
If it's sold, it is.
David?
I think I have a way out of this. Maybe the best way would be to, I don't know whether it's to offer a motion now or to vote this up or down and then offer a motion, but you want to hear what I get to say first? Or, I mean, what I would do is suggest that we make a motion to have the document include a section that has a permit category that allows people to land and sell up to 40 pounds of scallops. And that would be clarifying our intent here so that there's no ambiguity. Right now, the document doesn't speak to that particular situation. And that would be, well, you must have, I guess, yeah, it probably needs a little more clarification. You would have to have held a general category scallop permit. Well, not even non-VMS, because there's going to be people that are not, that hold a general category scallop VMS permit right now that are not going to qualify for the general category scallop fishery. And they'll be, so there's going to be more than just the non-VMS people that are going to end up in this category. But you will have had to have held a general category scallop permit. So it's, right? No?
You're saying not open access.
Not open access, right.
Well, a 1A or a 1B, right? Because there'll be people in 1B now that will not qualify to stay in 1B when we're done here.
What you're trying to accomplish is to accommodate everyone that won't qualify for a new general category permit, engaged in other fisheries so that they can continue to land up to 40 pounds of bycatch and sell it.
That's right.
The goal.
That's the goal.
Okay.
And I'm trying to preserve the status quo, basically.
Okay. Gene.
Yeah, it seems like the way that would work is you're saying everybody, the only people that can get this permit would be those that had a general, one of the two types of general scallop permits, either the VMS or non-VMS, but did not qualify for the general category sector that's allowed to land up to 400 pounds. So basically everyone who had one of these two permits would qualify for this new incidental permit, minus those that qualify for the 400-pound permit.
That's correct, G.
Does a control date come into place here? Whether you had the general category permit prior to the control date?
Well, that's sort of related to my question. I was going to ask when a vessel would have had to have one of these two permits, because the split between the 1A and 1B occurred after or right around when the control date was anyway. So you might want to say something about upon implementation of Amendment 11 or some other date, but right now it would be too hard to identify when the universe would be limited. And again, this doesn't talk about the tack that would potentially be removed. We still have to revisit that, right? Okay.
Pat.
I don't disagree with the intent of the motion, but it is a new alternative. And I think the council needs to be aware of that. And given the tight time frame that you're working under, it could create problems in completing the document.
Deirdre, the way the document's set up now, when we go through all these decisions and have the final vote and it's finally put into regs and implemented, people that don't qualify for a general category permit essentially have no access to landing scallops, right? Does the document state that?
Well, I think part of the issue is what's in there now is that any vessel could have an incidental, and let's be clear, not a 1A permit. They could have an incidental ability to possess 40 pounds. But what I tried to explain before, which is partly my inaccuracy of not realizing that they were not allowed to land those 40 pounds. Right now, the document says you could have an incidental permit and possess and land up to 40 pounds. But as we've learned today, right now, that's not permitted. You can only possess it and keep it for personal use. So I think what I was, what we've been discussing is that we should probably, because the document doesn't get into the minutia of how everything would be permitted, be very clear about whether we're talking about removing the 1A category ability to get a permit, and if this limited entry program was intended to basically replace the 1B and 1A permit together, or leave some sort of incidental landing and being able to sell ability. It should be definitely clarified. I think it's confused.
Well, there's a couple of ways I see you could go at it. The direction that's being proposed now, or allowing the sale of scallops on the incidental permit, changing the term from everything but sell to allowing the sale. But I think you still need to consider the control date, whether that applies as well. And then you also need to think about are we going to allow general category, newly identified general category, limited access general category permit holders to also hold this permit as well. So this isn't as simple as it appears.
Incidental catch comes up in Decision 7, and whether we address it now or later, that's the only time that it does come up. Originally, since there were no alternatives to the incidental catch permit, there wasn't really a whole lot of discussion that was necessary, but if we are going to explore potentially changing that permit status or definitely clarifying the intent of the council, then we could revisit it in that order when we get to Decision 7 or get through it now.
Unless there's objection, I'd prefer to take a pass on making decisions on the incidental side of things until after lunch. Hopefully we can think about how to untangle this mess and come out with a plan, and that we forge on with the other decisions we need to make that have been laid out. Jim Salisbury.
I think that's a reasonable approach, Mr. Chairman, but I would, if possible, if Deidre could give us the percentage of the total catch that this incidental catch actually represents, maybe, you know, we then have some options of how to deal with it. But originally we were talking about doing it off the top. We may just say, hey, it's a de minimis or some amount, that let's put it in the general category and you can solve the whole problem. But I think if we just know what it represents, in fact, if that's possible, then we probably could deal with it later, as you suggest.
I can, before we break, definitely. I just need a little time to find the right tables.
Okay. Paul Howard.
And I think something else to think about at lunch is, if it is de minimis, and we haven't done a lot of work on it, and we're talking about creating permits and everything, you know, can we just make a general statement that any of this bycatch will be taken off the top when we determine days at sea and tax, and that when we do the next amendment, which we're going to have to do for annual catch limits and accountability measures, when we do that, we'll have all the data in front of us. We can look at if we want to allocate a percent to bycatch or 2% or whatever we want to do. But let's do that in amendment rather than try to do it today. So think about just making a statement that says, when we figure out the total allowable catch, we're going to set aside a little, whatever that number is, and then we'll address it in more detail in the next amendment.
Right. Jim Salisbury.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'd move to table the motion on the floor until after the lunchtime break when we can get the information from Deirdre and then deal with it.
Is there a second? Seconded by John Nelson. All those in favor tabling the motion until after the lunch break, raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. The motion to table carries. Okay, Dave, we get back on course.
Okay, right back on course. Okay, so the next question is, who should qualify under a limited access or a limited entry system? And I've taken the liberty of combining the next two motions. We'll see how that works out. Maybe we'll have to split it. Maybe we won't. But the motion from the committee would be to identify the 11-year, that is 1994 to 2004, time period and the 1,000-pound annual poundage as the preferred alternatives for qualification. Is that?
Okay, discussion on that committee motions. Paul Howard.
This may be a point to think about what Tom had mentioned. When we've agreed on 5% as a preferred, you want to kind of match the number of participants with 5%, as opposed to if you made a 10%, you might want to have more participants than you did at 5. So is there a section the folks can look at that that would look at the different determination criteria where this is 10 years, it means, you know, 300 participants, whereas if it was 5 years, it means 100 participants. Can you point to that?
Sure. Actually, if you want to just stay in the decision document first, if you flip the page, basically on page 4, it describes all the potential options, and you can see which ones have been identified by the committee and which ones were identified by the advisors. I would just point out that the advisors ended up selecting more restrictive time period and a more restrictive landings criteria than the committee. And if you flip over, you can see Table 2 describes the potential number of qualifying vessels under the different time period and poundage criteria. Again, the range is from about 143 to 705. The paragraphs underneath that table try to address what Paul was just alluding to, in that basically the preferred alternative by the committee approximately would qualify about 459 vessels. And if we stick with the 5% allocation that we just passed in an earlier motion, and you assume, again, that total landings would be about 50 million pounds, and if you went and divided that by those qualifying vessels, you can see that the average pounds per vessel would be roughly 5,000 and some additional poundage. Again, the more restrictive alternative is described by the advisors in the next section. The next paragraph, section 547, actually in great detail, and all of the tables, basically tables 74 through 88, really, that whole section describes under from various different ways how those things affect each other on an individual basis and as a group of vessels. And it's broken out by region and by state in terms of how many vessels would qualify under the different scenarios by state. And again, I would just remind everyone, this is sort of the best case scenario in terms of qualifiers, because you always can imagine that through appeals and other things, we're not going to capture everything in this analysis. And also there are alternatives later in the document that could also increase this number of vessels related to some of the permit provisions that we'll get to next. I can go through some of the tables if you want, but in general, those are the main points.
Okay, to the motion on the board. Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Given our vote this morning of 5% on the TAC and Paul's counsel on mixing and matching, I'd like to make a motion to substitute, and it would be to identify the 11-year time period and substitute 5,000 for 1,000 annual poundage criteria. And my reason for doing this is it reflects the recommendation from the general category scallop advisors. It limits the pool of
vessels from, or reduces it from 459 to 203, and I think gives a good balance to our intent to mix and match a directed and a supplemental fishery.
Motion to substitute has been made. Any seconds? Dana Rice. Discussion on the motion to substitute 5,000 for 1,000. Dave Gaethel.
Okay. I oppose the motion. I think this is the part where we get into our philosophical bent here. This is going to create a very small number of people in a directed fishery, as opposed to qualifying a larger number of people that will not, by nature, probably be able to have much of a directed fishery. And that gets to the, you know, this whole philosophical thing of what did we want this fleet to look like and what did we want it to do. And I realize that the council is split on this issue. Some people want to have a very small number of people in a directed fishery, but I personally don't. So, anyway, I'm opposed to the motion.
Anyone else? Rodney Avalon.
Yeah, I also oppose the motion for basically the same reasons, but there's a lot of small inshore draggers that don't fish in Maine, but they depend on 1,000 pounds a year to help them out. So I oppose that. The revenue of 1,000 pounds to a 35-foot dragger fishing out of Rhode Island means a lot.
Tom Hill.
Like so many of these decisions, they are intricately tied to what we do next. And in doing this, it is not necessarily a good idea if, in fact, the next decision about how you allocate the opportunity might be done in a tiered way so that you're actually reflecting the history of the participants. I think that having a high number of people that end up, the 400 or 400 or 500 people that end up having an equal shot at the fishery so that it destroys the participants in the recent years who have been making a living pretty much full-time at it, I think is a terrible idea, and then I would support this motion because it limits the number of participants that would have an equal shot. On the other hand, if you are going to do a tiered opportunity where if the history of their participation means something and you're going to allocate opportunity in the future to whoever qualifies to those people based on their history of some kind, then that makes sense because you want to have more participants in a small boat fishery as long as it's consistent with the historical participation. Makes no sense to do that, if you're going to do that. On the other hand, if you're not going to do the former, then the latter makes a lot of sense. So I'm back in the position I was earlier this morning. I don't know what to support because it depends on what we're going to do afterwards.
Dana Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I seconded this for the conversation that just came out. And we've been through this at the council process and at the committee process. And in the committee process, I didn't support this, but I thought it was important to have both sides of this conversation out there for the people that didn't sit on the committee. Strangely enough, I probably won't vote for it, even though I seconded it, unless I'm required to by parliamentary procedure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Pat Kirkle.
Well, I don't support the 11-year time frame. I think it's far too long and that all it does is hurt current participants in the fishery. But if you're going to have an 11-year time frame, then I would support the 5,000 over the 1,000 because I think the problem with the 11 years and the 1,000 is that it's just far too liberal. It lets too many people in. It's something that we've done repeatedly in other fisheries is try to accommodate everyone, end up with a pool of people that's too large and spend the next 10 years trying to fix it. So I'm reluctantly going to support the motion, not because of the 11 years, but because of the 5,000 pounds.
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Tom fairly concisely and correctly placed the issue before us, and I think my view of this is that we're hopefully going to follow what the committee's recommendations are in subsequent issues, and that you will see that there is a tiered level of participation that was attempted to try to reflect kind of the two alternate styles of fishing in the general category. One is by vessels that are what we'd call directed fishing on scallops, and the others that are part-time fishing on scallops. And so we had a tiered system that tried to, or we recommended a tiered system that tries to break this number, the total number of vessels into two different tiers and structures. And therefore, it seems to me that the 450-odd vessels are not all participating in the same way. So it's not really very helpful to say, well, if you divide the number by 450, you get 5,000 pounds each. That's not the way that they will end up participating in the fishery based on the tiered structure. So in view of I have the same dilemma that Tom would have. If I knew how you're going to vote on the future ones, I would know how to vote on this. But in anticipation that we would follow the committee's preferred alternative recommendations, I would vote against this motion to substitute and hope that we would follow on with the initial committee's recommendation in this issue and in subsequent issues. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo those two thoughts, and that's been the committee's logic that, consistent with the vision statement that the council developed, that this would be the general category permit would allow a range of participations from small vessels to larger ones, from part-time players to more full-time players. We felt we needed to be more inclusive at this point, that it would be important to do that. Dave Gaethel made the point of vessels that depend on this as part of an overall, bigger picture. But it anticipates that next step, that not everyone is going to a decision we've made that not everyone would have an equal access to this fishery, that there would be some kind of tiering or some kind of allocation based on history, and that's where you make that adjustment to prevent this perennial overcapacity, inability to keep everyone happy type of thing. I think the next step after this is to build a system that allows the guy that goes out and catches 100 pounds now and then out of his backyard, but also allow the directed boat fishery to exist, but don't kick out the small timers right up front.
Tom Hill.
I just would be grateful if somebody could point out which section in the decision document that piece is in, and then secondly, at some point before we vote on this, I'd like to make another comment. Sorry, I was asking for the staff or somebody to point out which section that is in, because that has a significant bearing on how I look at this part of it. And then secondly, I wanted to reserve the opportunity, if I could, before you call the question on this, for another comment.
Deirdre, can you direct people to the other decision the committee made about tiers, where it is in the document?
Sure. It might be easiest to actually use the committee meeting summary in combination with the decision document. But in general, if you start with the decision document and you flip to, really, it's the next section. Section, how should the limited access be allocated? You can see that the committee kind of fell on individual allocation within three tiers. And without getting ahead of ourselves too much, that does try to incorporate different levels of participation, and they also went with a permit provision that would weigh in on number of years active in the fishery. The other thing that and there is more discussion in the committee meeting summary related to those motions as well, but the other thing, it's very hard to digest all these tables, and I completely appreciate that. Probably one sentence that might help in terms of a summary of the story in these qualification alternatives is that from the analysis and what we learned from the tables is that the poundage criteria is really the more limiting of the qualification options. So the difference between the poundage criteria is really kind of the make it or break it in terms of the number of vessels. The year criteria is not as limiting in that sense for most regions. So considering different poundage criteria is sort of the one that has the more impact on number of participants. So other possible things that were discussed at the committee level were to reduce that pool of participants by looking at the years as alternatives, because those are basically less limiting than changing the poundage criteria.
Anyone else? Rip Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a couple of comments here. One is that it's interesting that I think the discussion is mirroring exactly the discussion that we had at the committee level. I was in favor of a shorter control date, and in fact, I was in favor of putting out what the general category advisors had forwarded. I duly had my knuckles wrapped by the committee for a total lack of a second on that. If you notice in the document of our meetings, then we went to look at a shorter time frame and 1,000 pounds. That was discussed, and that got changed, and we eventually worked our way to where we are in terms of the recommendation. I believe that the discussion is healthy. I might like to see it changed to something else, but I think at this point in time, I would wait for the public to give us their comments, and at that point in time, I think I'll make up my final decision. So I would not support changing it at this point in time.
Tom?
Yeah, I am. Boy, I am wrapped around the axle on this stuff because I really am not clear. I know we're just preparing a public hearing document, but I think that in truth, I think we need to be clear to the public in doing so what it is that we're suggesting. I think Ron Smallwood's comment earlier about the available resource in the Gulf of Maine and the general small boat category fishery and how it has played out over the time that I've been involved in scallops management, just for the record, it's almost 15 years, so I was around when Amendment 4 was written and was on the committee. And I really believe that in the end, we need to avoid the mistakes of the past. Really do. I urge the council to do that. And I would encourage us to pick a shorter time frame for the qualifying criteria. We need to try to the best of our ability to preserve the opportunities of the participants who have been dependent upon the fishery today in the last 5 years or more. And I would suggest that the 2000 to 2004 qualifying criteria in a 1,000-pound catch history would be appropriate in order for us to signal, one, that we're trying to limit the capacity of the fishery to a number and to a qualifying criteria that will allow the participants who have been in the fishery recently to be able to continue to participate. And then I think on the next action, I think we need to include a tiering measures that allow the participants who do qualify to participate in the fishery in some level consistent with their previous history. And I don't know what the right parliamentary maneuver is, but I'm not sure I'm allowed to move to substitute since there's a motion to substitute on the floor. But if I'm allowed to do so parliamentary-wise, I would move to substitute the main motion with the 2000 to 2000 qualifying period with a 1,000-pound criteria.
So that would be an amending the substitute motion.
That's correct.
Is there a second? Seconded by Rodney Avila. Discussion on the amended substitution. Mike Leary.
Perhaps maybe we ought to split the question. It would help me.
Is that a motion to split this amended substituted motion?
I mean, it's been substituted twice. You got it.
Yeah, Rodney Avila seconded it. I think we'll, if you want to, let's try to get through this part. You'll have a whack at splitting it before we get to the main motion part. If that's all right. Any other comments on the amended substitution? Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, it's a process-related question because, as someone said, the conversation we're having here right now pretty well reflects the committee discussions over the last number of meetings. And we're all getting wrapped around the axle, myself included. And I'm not sure whether or not it would be possible as to have Dieter and Dave go through the entire package of what the committee has proposed so that we are looking at it as a comprehensive and package. And we're picking each one of them apart without understanding the context of the entire intent. And whether or not we vote on them individually or as a package, at least an explanatory of what the committee's decision and thought process might be helpful to and shorten up our deliberations.
Well, Deirdre tried to do that, and I cut her off at the very beginning. Well, and quite frankly, I think that, as I said in my comments, 23 public meetings, 4 PDT or 5 PDT meetings, these issues have been around for a while. Was sort of relying on the fact that people had read through the stuff that we've been given and as this process has developed. And I don't think there's a lot of subtlety between one thing or another. I think there's some pretty black and white issues in people's minds. Some people want maximum amount of participants with the lowest threshold to get in, and others want to see a smaller amount of participants with a narrow window of qualification. And we're going to hear from the public on this, too. No matter what decisions we make, no matter what we identify as preferred alternatives, we're going to get that feedback from the public on those issues, as well as some of the other issues. At this point, to stop and have Deirdre do what she wanted to do back at 9 o'clock this morning, I'm not sure how helpful that will be, Terry, to be honest with you. I respect your request, but I think, or at least I hope, we all know what the decisions are that we need to be making and what the alternatives are for each decision. Dana Rice. Actually, Dave Simpson, please, the chairman.
If I could, I think the one piece that Terry's pointing to that might help in this is just the next two motions, which are, how the access should be allocated. And if people see, or at least where the committee went, they understand our thought process, if that's all right. So if I could just read the next two motions, if that helps people here.
Go ahead.
Following this qualification criteria, the next step was, the next decision was to identify individual allocation based on trips, which was option B as a preferred alternative. So it'd be individual allocations based on trips, and then further identify allocation based on best year indexed by years in the fishery with option B, which is a 25% premium. So in other words, there's your sorting out of larger players and smaller players and giving some on an individual basis, based on trips, which we felt was easier to deal with in a lot of respects than pounds in terms of law enforcement and other things, and then basically giving some favor over a recent five-year period to boats that have been in longer time committed participants as opposed to sort of newcomers. So that sort of finishes the logic for the allocation decisions that the committee went through.
Okay. So now we know what the committee did, and we can deal with that. And now that people know what the next recommendations are going to be out of the committee, they can decide whether they like them or not and whether they want to amend them and substitute the amended motion and everything else. But
let's get back to 5B, the amended, the move to amend the substitute motion. Any further discussion? Jim Salisbury.
I'd like to speak to the amendment motion. I think that while it, looking at the chart, it makes sort of a compromise sense that in that the number comes out to 369 vessels instead of 450 or 203. So it seems like it makes sense, but what in fact happens is it's who those players are that change. And the spirit of what the committee was trying to do with the next two motions, as has been described, is to try to keep a limited number of vessels that are actually full-time general category vessels, and also an opportunity for the kinds of vessels that are what we call very part-time, maybe not just seasonally part-time, but year-to-year part-time, vessels that come and go as scallops are more available in their areas. So that's why the the choices were made, and if you're trying to keep that character of the fleet rather than just the number, if you're not looking just at the number, but what that number represents, then it seems to me we would follow the recommendations of the committee, and if we were to do that, then we'd vote down both the amendment and the substitute and go back with the committee, and that's what I would recommend we do. Thank you.
Any other comments on the amended substituted motion? Dana Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sort of to repeat what I said. I seconded the first one because I thought the committee discussion needed to be heard around the full table, and then I won't support my seconded motion, and I won't support this. I think what we need to bear in mind here is the committee has been through this process. The committee has done a lot of work on this, as you said, Mr. Chairman, as you keep reiterating, what we're trying to do is to put something out here for public comment. We're trying to pick a preferred option. But what I'm afraid we're getting into, what I see us getting into here, is trying to lock in some things ahead of time, and that bothers me. I'd like to see us have something go to the public that is as broad as it can be for all of the people to comment on, and then come back to the council, that's my view of this process. It may be wrong, but I don't like to limit things up front. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't support this amended and the friendly whatever. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to call the question on the motion to amend the substitute. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 4. Opposed? Opposed. 13 opposed. Motion to amend fails. We're back on the substitute motion. This was the motion that increased the poundage qualifier, is that right? From 1,000 to 5,000 pounds. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 7 opposed. 10. Motion fails. 7 in favor, 10 against. So now we're back on the original committee motion. Mike Leary.
I'd like to move to split the question, please.
That's right. You're interested in splitting the question. Is there a second? John Nelson, is that a second? That's a second, John Nelson. Jim Salisbury.
I'm not sure it's really a point of order. Since the previous two motions did, in effect, split the question one way and then split it the other way, it seems to me that splitting the question is really not.
I think there could be a third combination that we didn't get to that third level of substitute.
The third combination is the original motion, I think. Okay.
Okay, all those in favor of splitting the motion, please raise your hand. Three. Opposed? Thirteen. Opposed. The motion to split fails. We're back on the main motion. I'm going to go to the audience for some comment on the main motion. Bruce, to the motion, please.
I guess apparently this isn't a bad time. I'm going to ask if there's going to be a hearing process on this motion or any of the motions concerning the eligibility. I haven't heard anything about a hearing process at all. I wonder if this is a timely time to actually discuss if that's going to be one of the things discussed here today.
I can try to. I think your question might be the intent or the hopeful intent of today is that the council will identify preferred options for each of the measures in Amendment 11. Mm-hmm. We will submit that to the agency, and it will become available for public comment, and council staff and several council members will have public hearings on this document with the preferred alternatives and taking comment at several public hearings up and down the coast, but then also accepting electronic and written comments on the whole document for most of the month of May. And then we'll bring this document back to the council in June, incorporating those public comments before final decision.
So in the process between now and then, a hearing process could be developed, apparently. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying a hearing process on the eligibility. Is that in the works? Is that part of this process?
Appeal process. Appeal.
You're talking about an appeal? In other words, if you didn't qualify, so to speak, you
Yeah, and
qualify.
I have my reasons. I'd be glad to divulge my reasoning behind it, which is extremely unique, which is sort of sad. But I probably am not unique.
Generally, when you make a switch from an open access to a limited access process and you have qualifying criteria that determines who's in and who's out,
mm-hmm.
there is a narrow window of time where there is appeals heard. I believe the service looks at those, but they're under very strict constraints in terms of whether or not you can test the landings. Let's say there's a landings qualifier that you had to meet a threshold, and the data that the service has doesn't line up with the data you claim to have, then you could come in and offer up alternative sources of
That's why I'm just wondering I guess you can speak to this later. I'm not trying to interrupt the proceedings. I'm just trying to make sure that doesn't get swept under the table.
No, there will be an appeals process, but I think I want to be clear that it's not that you can go in and say that you weren't able to qualify because you're in the Azores doing something or what have you. I mean, it's really limited to the data that's available and whether or not you're contesting that data in order to make a determination as to whether or not your vessel or your permit actually qualifies for the new permit.
You may want to check. Page 23 describes the potential appeals process that would be included.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else to the main motion? Yes, sir. In the back. Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob Keyes. First off, I'd like to say that I was in favor of including this 11-year time period. But in order for this to work at all, we need a bigger allocation. Otherwise, no one's going to be able to participate at the level that they once did. Even now, with a 5% allocation, we're going to be looking at that anyhow. But what's going to happen here is if you let people qualify from this 11-year time period and you only have a 5% allocation, there are going to be people like myself who depend on this fishery as a primary source of income who are going to be shortchanged no matter what kind of tiered system or individual allocation we have, just simply because 5% is not going to qualify this many people at the level that they are used to. So what's going to happen is, and this is already happening, people from 11 years ago are going to get a permit, some kind of small permit, maybe 1,500-pound permit or something, to fish in a place where there is no scallops. They're not going to, they're given a permit that they're not going to be able to use, admittedly. So they're going to sell the permit. So what it's doing is taking the permit, taking the landings out of my hands or anyone who depends on the fishery as a source of income, giving it to someone who doesn't even probably have a boat anymore and forcing me to buy that permit from them. At the last oversight committee meeting, by the end of the meeting, one person who was all for this type of 11-year structure came up to me afterwards and said, "Hey, Bob, you know, don't worry about it. I'll sell you my permit for cheap." And it's kind of like, thanks, but I don't really think that that's what we should be getting at. Thank you.
Ron, then Maggie.
Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. I urge the committee to vote up all the council to vote up all the committee's motions where they reached a preferred alternative, because there were a lot of discussions, and the whole purpose here is to gain public comment and come back and vote on it in June. That this shouldn't be a hearing for and revisit everything that was done in committee. That was my first comment this morning. There's a lot of decisions. If you go through the decision document, that there is no preferred alternative, and I think that's where you need to concentrate your focus today. Please do that. Just please vote all the committees. There's a lot of questions I have here. I don't necessarily agree with this approach, but that'll come out in public comment. If we're going to keep on trying to deal with all the intricacies here, we're not going to get this meeting done. Please vote for the committee recommendations and deal with the things where there is no preferred alternative. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Maggie?
Thank you. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. This is not the combination of criteria that I would have spoken in favor of, but we weren't given an opportunity to speak on the substitute motions. But at this point, contrary to the advice that Ron just gave about, I think perhaps what you had suggested earlier, Mr. Chairman, is on some issues you will not be able to reach a preferred alternative. And I think this very, very contentious one that has huge implications is probably one of those, and it may be better not to choose a preferred alternative for the qualification criteria until you hear more from the public at the public hearings, the rationale for whatever combination prevails. Thank you.
Paul Howard. We always wrestle with preferred alternatives, and the CEQ guidelines say, absolutely, vote on preferred alternatives. It's almost an obligation, because if you don't vote on them, the public really can't concentrate on, you know, and give very focused input. And when you're dealing with thousands of pages of document, they're going to focus on what's most important to them. And when you're looking at allocation issues and qualification issues that we've dealt with for a year and a half, it's very important that you have preferred alternatives. It really is, and it's almost a cop-out to say after a year and a half, we're not going to tip our hand where we're leaning towards. And for these issues, we really should. And
Dan Rice.
Mr. Chairman, call a question, please.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Gaithel. All those in favor of calling the question and limit cutting off debate, raise your hand. Pat, you're abstaining.
I've lost track.
To call the question.
Yeah,
okay, that's 1701. Okay, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the committee motion on the board, please raise your hand. Opposed? Motion carries 10-6. And one abstention. The next easiest one online, Dave.
Okay.
Okay. So the next decision to be made is how should the access be allocated? And the committee motion is to identify individual allocation based on trips, option B, as a preferred alternative.
Can I just interrupt for a very quick second? There actually was a second motion related to the first bullet, not necessarily assuming that you have to make it, but the committee did identify that the determination of qualification amount, the committee identified a preferred alternative that once you have a number of qualifying vessels, there would be some sort of weighting of their allocation. The committee identified the 25% option B as preferred. The advisors were also supportive of this, although the decision was much more split. Don't want to slow things down. You don't have to necessarily identify it as preferred, but I just wanted to let you know that before we move to the next subject, that was something too.
Yeah, I got those out of order. I had that next, but she's right. I mixed them up, and it probably does make more sense to take them in the order that the committee had. So if you would, I'll move that first, and then we'll come to the other part. So it is to identify the allocation based on best year, indexed by years in the fishery, with option B, the 25% weighting as the preferred alternative.
And just for background, that's motion 5 from the committee meeting. The discussion that the committee had on it is at the bottom of page 3 of the meeting summary and goes on to the top of page 4. This is not a major issue, but it's in general gives a little bit more weight to vessels that have been in the fishery for more than a year. The idea behind it was that many participants that are going to qualify most likely are newer participants, and this is a way to recognize vessels that have been in the fishery for a longer period of time.
Okay. To that motion, any comment from the council? Questions? Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. After successfully just railing forward progress by second-guessing my own participation on the committee, I'd like to support the council's recommendation and as part of the overall package.
Terry, anyone else? Anyone in the audience with a burning desire to comment on this? Back to the council. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed. Abstentions. Motion carries 16-0-1 abstention. Dave, back to the...
Okay, yeah, so the follow-up one then is to identify individual allocation based on trips, option B, as the preferred alternative.
Everybody know where they are on the document? Okay. Any questions or comments on this motion? Okay. Anyone in the audience? Oh, sorry, Jim Alden.
Does this mean that depending on what tier you're in, you'll be allocated a certain number of trips per year? Okay. I'm opposed to that motion on safety factor that if a person leaves the dock and they it's being counted against them. I mean, I think this is a unique enough fisheries that we ought to be looking at pounds versus It's a single species fisheries. It's very clean. It's very unique in that sense, so that this is a place where we don't even have to think about, you know, the number of trips and get into all that because it's so directed that for most of the tiers that we'll be talking about that you should be looking at pounds, not number of trips.
Anyone else on the council? Sally.
I agree with that statement and would move to substitute option A, an allocation in pounds.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Tom Hill. We now have a motion to substitute. Primary difference is that the individual allocation is in pounds, not in trips, in the substitute motion. Dave Gaethel.
Yeah. I think I'm going to oppose this only because while I recognize safety concerns under any of these, it's easier to track trips than it is pounds. Yeah, you can track pounds with the trips with the VMS. Boat crosses a line, it's on a trip. I also think if we give a certain number of pounds on a daily basis, that adds, that has safety issues as well, because people are going to try and catch that number of pounds, and they're going to stay there until they do it, even if the weather's deteriorating. So I don't think there's an easy answer here. I don't think any one of them is perfect, but I prefer trips over pounds.
Deirdre?
Very quickly, thanks. In the interest of time and not to, again, rediscuss things at the committee level, I would just urge everyone on page 4 of the committee meeting summary. There is a paragraph. The committee, again, did discuss this trips versus pounds issue for quite some time, actually, and broke for lunch because we needed to really think it over. And the paragraph in the middle of that page, before ultimately the motion passed, motion number 6, motion 5, there is a lot of debate and discussion about the differences in pros and cons of trips versus pounds.
Dave Simpson.
Okay, and one of those issues, and maybe Gene can help me with this one, was that an allocation in pounds would likely trigger a NIMS requirement to collect up to 3% of the revenue from this fishery to recover costs of management. So that's an important thing to keep in mind, allocating pounds or trips. That does not happen if an allocation happens in trips.
Sally?
Yeah, just two additional points. First, I think we need to note that this was the recommended preferred alternative from the general category advisors. And second, in our previous motion, we just qualified a larger pool of potential participants in this fishery. So this is a way that we can give them greater flexibility in how they're going to decide to carry out the fishery.
Paul Howard.
Yeah, I think that Jim hit on that safety issue, and where we now have twice as many participants, or could have twice as many participants, that means half as many trips, perhaps, in general, half as many trips. So a trip is going to be very valuable. So your safety concerns, and we've heard them up and down the coast, recently in groundfish and scallops. So, you should consider the safety. Now, was there any discussion of split trips? And you know the problems we've had with that and the limited access fleet.
Yes, if I can answer it, there was, and since I didn't get a chance to go through the whole decision document in the beginning, at the end, under new potential alternatives to discuss, there is an alternative that came through the advisory panel, and again, at this last advisory panel meeting, that does discuss just that issue to potentially split out trips. When this came up a year ago now, there was concern about monitoring, and really, if there's weather and safety issues, 400-pound trip is very different than an 18,000-pound limited access trip. So there has been discussion about split trips, for sure.
Dave Simpson.
Yeah, and the other detail to that is that it was specifically, the concept was to allocate trips in 200-pound lots so that you could use, it's sort of a half a trip concept. 200 pounds, and you can go out fish for the day and get that, and then up to 400, but you would use two of the trips you were allocated. So it's a way to address that, so you're not getting into broken trips for a 400-pound, fishing day.
Anyone else on the council? Pat Kirkle.
In the interest of being upfront about this, that's still a broken trip, and we're going to have a lot of problems with that because, effectively, it's still allows people to land up to the 400 pounds some way. So it's an individual allocation that's not called an individual allocation. And if the rationale that Gene gave at the committee meeting was that the 3% only applies to the allocation in pounds because the allocation in trips is not a guaranteed amount of fish. Well, if you have split trips, it becomes a guaranteed amount of fish. Plus, all the tracking difficulties. I think the reality is this fishery is very different than the directed scallop fishery, and I don't think we need to or should have these same kind of broken trip issues. Having said that, I I think that, you know, you should have gone with an allocation of pounds, because I think that's where we're going to get eventually. But, you know, separate from this broken trip issue.
Anyone else in the council? The audience? A few hands up. Yes, sir. I haven't heard from you today.
Paul Baffity, general category fisherman. Even right now, it's like a 30-hour window of weather to go out and get your 400 pounds. So if you leave the dock and you blow a hydraulic hose, you're going to be 400 pounds taken off your allocation. If I'm against a trip, it's got to be pounds, I would think, especially the way it is today. It's 30 hours now, and it's probably only going to get worse. You need 6 hours to get out there, 6 hours back. Got to make 20 tows, get three, four bushel. That's how it is now. It's hard enough as it is. Thank you.
Dan?
Well, I might agree with Pat that maybe ultimately we're going to get to potentially allocating this fishery in pounds. This is not the right time to do it because, as we've discussed before, there are no control mechanisms in here to monitor pound landings and to control it. This is different than other fisheries, let's say, you know, clam fishery that's landing things in 3,000-pound elements. This is highly fungible. Your 400-pound trip limit, I don't agree also with this issue of safety. I do think we should be concerned with safety, but you're talking about basically a fishery which is based upon just 400-pound increments where people are going to have a discrete number of times they go out in the ocean. They can see our weather predicting is well enough now that you can say, I'm not going to go out if it looks bad. That's what a small boat fishery is supposed to be. It's supposed to be, am I going to go out for the day or not go out for the day? I mean, in terms of the last comment, the fact of the matter is the reason why it's taking 30 hours is because we've overfished the resource. It's why we need to cut this resource back and cut it back. If we gain control now, which is what this amendment is supposed to do, hopefully we'll come back to what we had before, which was good fishing. People make short trips because we'll control the number of trips. If we base it upon overfished inshore resource, which we've done now, we're making a big mistake. Your whole idea to control this is to get back to what we had where we can possibly have a limited amount of fishing take place on good stocks without burning a lot of fuel, making short trips 12 hours dock to dock. So I think you have no choice but to stay with the 400-pound trip limit because there are no management tools in here for allocating by pounds and controlling it by pounds. And I don't think safety is an issue in a small day boat fishery, which is supposed to be prosecuted in less than a day. Our current weather predicting is more than good enough to predict that. Thank you. It's not the same as 18,000-pound trip. Thank you.
Maggie?
Thank you. I want to urge you to support the allocation in pounds. That is a substitute, correct? I do think that has been what I have heard from the general category, a lot of general category participants on how they would prefer to have their allocation. And I do think it would be really helpful, though, if the public hearing document did highlight this issue of the potential tax in order to monitor it so that people could then weigh that in their decision-making, you know, and urging you which option to actually vote for in the end. Thank you.
Bruce, and then Bob.
I'd like to very much disagree with Danny that this is extremely a safety issue. This whole issue is a safety issue for general category boats. And when he downplays the fact that it's a safety issue, I don't know where he's coming from.
Thank you, Bob Keith. I know where he's coming from. The difference between big boat and small boat fishery, one difference is Danny's thinking that you can look at the forecast and see, okay, it's blowing 10 to 15, it's supposed to be 2 to 4 foot seas, I have a 125-foot boat, no problem. Problem is that that weather forecast is not exactly what they called for. If the weather changes by 5 or 10 knots and the sea's 2 or 3 feet, it's an entirely different situation. Although it doesn't happen much in my past 5 years of fishing, I've only maybe turned around 2 or 3 times. It's still an issue. And if I didn't have that flexibility, then that could cause a serious problem. It only has to happen once. I think that the issues, the importance of given the flexibility that this type of structure would have, allocating in pounds, is a big thing here. It would allow the boats to fish at different levels. I usually don't come in without 400 pounds. I know there are some people who fish shell stock for 100 pounds, and I think that we should just keep that flexibility. As far as Danny's comments about how we should not promote overfishing near shore areas, like I said before, there's other solutions to that, and a big solution to that is giving us more access area rights, which I think will come. So basically the safety issue is real. You would avoid the split trip problems, and it would allow for the flexibility that is historically part of the general category fleet. Thank you.
Okay. Back to the council. The motion to substitute. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 7. Opposed? Ten. Motion to substitute fails. 7-10. Back on the main motion. Any last comments? Okay. We'll call a question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 13. Opposed? 4. Motion carries 13-4. Dave, what's the next one?
Should additional limited entry provisions be included? It's things like a vessel potentially qualifying 2 permits, permit stacking up to some threshold, and establishing a maximum share that any one vessel could maintain or could own.
All right. Well, why don't we put it up on the board and see what happens?
Okay. And Deidre can, backstop me that I got this right, because it is a 3 parts. But the motion is to identify as preferred alternatives one vessel potentially qualifying 2 permits, and that was section 3.1.2.5.1.2, and allow permit stacking up to 60,000 pounds or 150 trips. And that's 3.1.2.5.4.3, and establish a maximum of 1 to 5% ownership of the total limited access in the general category. So it's not specified. It just maintains that range to put out for public comment. That basically is a concept.
Okay, and those are the committee motions, discussions, or comments. None? Well, okay. Pat?
On the last one, the 1 to 5, We're changing the term permits to access. So someone can't, I don't understand how it works. The decision was the preferred alternative would be number of trips. And I think I'm not sure what the access refers to and how this would be tracked. So I guess just a question of clarification at this point.
Well, I think the idea was that it would be figured out in 400-pound lots. In other words, done by pounds, correct?
I think the clarification actually came from the advisory panel meeting first, and the issue being that there potentially, depending on how it ends up at the end of the day, could be a multiple different types of permits allocated. The worst case, well, I don't want to say worst case, but the largest potential would be if this access was granted on an individual basis, every single vessel that qualifies potentially could get a different access amount to the fishery. So to be a little bit more accurate, rather than saying 1% to 5% of permits, because permits could have very different access to the fishery, some large, some small, the idea or recommendation was to change that term to access so that in terms of whether it's total poundage or total trips with a maximum of 400 pounds per trip, no vessel could have more than that access to the fishery.
Well, that's problematic because the number of trips and pounds per trip will change on an annual basis. And obviously, the ownership in vessels doesn't change on an annual basis for an individual owner. We can't track one against the other.
I think that's true, but I also think that if it goes down, for example, in the future, then so will that access that that individual vessel would have been allocated. So I think the percentage should maintain because that vessel would also get less trips or less poundage to the resource.
I think that's true in terms of permits, but I'm not sure it's true in terms of trips. I mean, permits, not trips.
Jim Salisbury.
I guess I'm a little confused by Pat's comments because if the permits would be giving trips, so the permit would be a number of trips that you're allowed, and it seems to me that as you stack them or as you utilize them, you have some finite number of trips that you're then accumulating, so I don't understand why it wouldn't be. The permits and the trips are sort of equated. I don't see why there's a difference. So I'm confused by Pat's comments.
Well, if I understand this, it allows some stacking and also potentially some leasing, so given those two things, trips and permits don't necessarily exactly equate. And if it does, or if the intent is that it does, then it's certainly much simpler still to do it in terms of permits and not in terms of access.
Go to Dave and then back to Jim.
Yeah, I'm not. If we end up with an alternative that where each permit represents a different amount of landings or a different number of trips, I'm not sure how you could do it in permits because they're different units. I think it. So I'm just not following the concern you have.
Anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience? Dave Frula.
Th-
Thank you, Dave Frula for the Fishery Survival Fund. I'd just like to point out, direct your attention to the number one, the one vessel potentially qualifying two vessels. One vessel potentially qualifying two vessels. That's what it says. That was something you voted against in Herring. I'd come up and actually spoken in favor of it. The argument that we'd used then was that that was a resource. There was plenty of resource out there so that you could have essentially one vessel having two histories, both pre and post sale. I don't know whether that makes the same sort of sense when you are looking at constricting, needing to constrict this fishery. It's not consistent with your consistency amendment. Again, I made this point at the committee and didn't get anywhere with it, but I'm just mentioning it again because I think it's worth mentioning.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if we ought to split this question up because if you're against one part of it here, I mean, are the three of them, I don't understand the linkage of the, there seem to be three disparate elements, and I don't understand the linkage, and I'd like somebody to offer me a reason why these three things are linked together.
Anyone have a reason for Dave? Deirdre?
It was mostly the interest of time at the committee level. You're right, they are not related or interrelated in any way. They can be taken separately. They are all under the permit provision section in the document, and these were the ones that were described as being a little bit different than the consistency amendment, warranting discussion of do we want to identify any of them as preferred, but they do not necessarily have to remain linked.
Yeah, I know this isn't going to please the chairman, but I would like to split these into three separate motions.
Is there a second? Jim Island seconds. All those in favor of splitting the motion into three separate motions, please raise your hand. Nine. Opposed? Motion to split carries 9-6. Now we have three motions. We'll start with the first one. The one vessel qualifying two vessels. A little background, D or Dave? Dave Simpson or Deirdre, any background you want to offer up on this?
Sure. Why don't we just look, because it's a little hard to tell from what's been described there. On page 24 of the main EIS document is a description of the two possible options for this topic. And this was developed in response to a lot of comments we heard during scoping that because of the open access nature of this fishery, NIMS does not give, let's say a vessel has some history in general category, but then they go to get a new boat or upgrade their boat. They are then given a new general category permit number because it's open access and they're not permitted to transfer that history. So a lot of people were concerned that along this years of qualification, they were going to not be able to use history they felt deemed them qualification to a future permit. So we talked about this a lot in development of Amendment 11. The alternative is described there in italics, and basically it is understood that this was talked about in the Herring Amendment as well. And there was a lot of discussions about the pros and cons of that. At the last committee meeting, we did talk about this at length as well, and it was a lot of concern was raised that there's no way for this document or staff to be able to give you a good sense of how many additional vessels would qualify under this type of alternative, because basically what the alternative says is that if a vessel retained their history in the purchase and sales agreement, they could then qualify for a permit, and if that person who bought the vessel also could qualify under the same requirements, they could get a permit too. There's no way that I have a very good feeling of how many people have actually done this in their purchase and sales agreement. So it, by approving it and selecting it, certainly it does increase the risk of more vessels coming in and limiting that pool and having some capacity issues, but it is in response to a lot of concern we heard during scoping.
So just I'm a little unclear. So if that wasn't allowed, if the multiple vessels qualifying off of or people or permits being qualified off of one vessel wasn't allowed, How do you determine who does qualify? Was it the original qualifier or the most recent qualifier?
Please correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't work on the Herring Amendment, but as I understand it, the person with the current permit would have qualified, not the person who sold it.
Gene Martin voted to allow this to happen. I mean, that's what the Herring Amendment allows. Independent history developed by subsequent or multiple owners of the same vessel to qualify the vessel for herring.
We disapproved that.
We disapproved.
No.
Yes, Hannah's in the. That's.
We disapproved it.
No, no, it's approved.
Anna, come on
well,
down.
Who's the herring?
This is such a tortured topic. It depends whether or not the vessel had limited access permits, Gene. There's still splitting issues for people who may have done a PNS speaking to a herring history and kept that separate from limited access permits.
Vessel history, if developed independently by subsequent owners, can qualify different vessels now for a limited access permit if it had the permits and so forth.
Right, but my understanding of this provision in Scallop is that it would relieve people who had done a purchase and sale prior to this action from that permit splitting restriction. I believe that's the intention of this motion.
But that's what the Herring Amendment did, too.
No, Herring Amendment maintained the permit splitting aspect of the whole thing. We do have people who cleanly have a herring history where one hull is, there's potential one hull could generate multiple eligible vessels.
Right, and that's what I thought this was.
No.
Oh, then I'm confused, and that's exactly what I thought. Deirdre needs to explain what's different. Is that what you thought it was, too? That one hull can qualify several vessels when they come in for a limited access permit if that those histories were developed independently by different owners on the same boat? Right. See, that's exactly what we're talking about here. And that is, and Herring does allow that. Pat, we just wrote a letter on it, Pat.
Herring does allow that, but I think Hannah's right. I thought, anyway, the intention was to address the splitting part of the issue and not the subsequent qualification by another owner, but whether or not you could split your herring permit from another permit, from your own permits, and sell it to somebody else.
That issue. My understanding, this is the qualification issue. Maybe I'm wrong.
My understanding through these discussions in the committee was that this was an attempt to create an option that would relieve people from that permit splitting problem that we assume there are people out there who would otherwise confront. They would have had a vessel that was fishing open access general category, but they also had, for instance, a limited access groundfish permit. They sold that vessel and took steps that they thought would allow them to retain their scallop fishing history. I believe this alternative is supposed to allow them to use that retained scallop history to qualify a new boat for scallops, even though technically the history of that vessel was used to qualify a different vessel for a different limited access permit. Now, maybe the language is a little unclear in the document, but
there may be two questions. I think they both have to be answered. Unless, because the way it's written now, I don't think you can tell what's the purpose.
Well, maybe we shouldn't use the terms on the board, but if the alternative on page 24 isn't written the way you like, then we could change it. The important part is in italics. In the main document, document number 2, page 24.
Yeah. It's the initial qualification.
But it's not addressing. Gene, look at the second paragraph in that section Deirdre is referring you to. It says other than this scenario, and then it goes on and lays out the problem associated with permit splitting. I'm sorry to use a term that we use in-house, but that's...
Yeah, that's... The outside language, though, is the Herring question about qualifying... One vote's history qualifying more than...
I think the part you might be missing is the second part, in that the same hole wouldn't qualify two permits necessarily. Basically, if the person held on to that history, they would qualify for one permit based on the history before it was sold.
That's the boilerplate that's in the regs now, that if you have two vessel owners that are claiming the same history to qualify a boat, then the regional administrator decides the question.
Yeah, let me just get to the second part. The second part clarifies, we hoped here, because of the problems with Herring, that a second permit could not be issued unless that new owner with the same hull qualified themselves under the same criteria. It's not that there's only one qualification criteria that two people are arguing about. It's that the same hull was actually ended up qualifying two different owners, but with different history.
All right. We're going to leave this one on the board, and we're going to break for lunch. Deirdre, I think that you and I and Pete need to talk briefly and remind everybody that we've still, when we left, we had